KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My name is Mike Hagan, and this is Radio Orbit. Stick around. We've got Kent Stedman from CyberspaceOrbit.com. And right now, we have Sam and Anna DiAgostino. DiAgostino and his daughter Anna. We'll be back with them in just a minute here. It's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit. Just a few minutes after 11 p.m. now on Monday, the 15th of January. We've got a great show lined up for you tonight. Kent Stedman, my good friend, the Bard from CyberspaceOrbit.com. He'll be with us in about 55 minutes. We'll be talking about everything from this amazing comet that's been flying by the sun over the last week or so. And, well, from there, who knows where with Kent, but you can get a leg up on everyone and see what's going to happen a little bit later at Kent's site over there at www.cyberspaceorbit.com. All right, before we get going, though, let's do the due diligence to our friends before us. Thanks to Debbie Johnson, as always, Free Range Radio Theater, I should say. Great stuff. Tonight, Robert Louis Stevenson's Kidnapped, I guess it was. Anyway, before that, Kelvin and Jason, Jazz plus Blues equals Slippery When Wet. Tech Radio, informative as always. Jeff Wheeler starting things off with Uncommon Light, 3 to 5 p.m. every Monday. Radio Excelente on KOPN. And glad to be a part of it, okay? All right, thanks to everybody who listened last week and participated in the program. Thanks to the remarkable Stephen Herod Buhner. Awesome stuff, the power of plants. How about it, you know? Stephen is just amazing, and I love when he's on the program. We also heard some great new tunes from the guys from Yachai. Thanks to Jeff and William for making the music available to us. If you missed it, it's all on the web, www.mikehagan.com in the archives, okay? Tonight, as I said, the wonderful Kent Stedman, the brilliant heart and mind behind cyberspaceorbit.com, lots to talk about with Kent. This comet in particular has got everyone sort of jaw-dropped over the last week. You know, a picture sort of worth lots of words in this case, but like I say, hop on over to Kent's site at Cyberspace Orbit, and you can take a look. Holy moly. As usual, Kent just gets lost in this stuff, and we'll talk to him about it in just a little while. Okay, stick around for that. We also have some live music, if you didn't figure that out already. We started things off with some music there in studio from my friend Sam DiAgostino and his daughter Anna. And I'm going to put them on here. Let's see. Say hello, you guys.
Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hello. All right. There you have it. Let's see. What's that? Mic 2. That's what I need to get up. Okay. There you go. And Sam and Anna are here going to play some tunes for us. We also have a few things to talk about. There's some news in the music biz that Sam wants to share with us. So let's do that maybe, I guess. Sam, what brings you in here tonight?
Well, as some folks know, I've been running the open mic down at the Blue Fugue. Started it back in the old music cafe days. And carrying on with that. And, you know, with all the produced music and the corporate music that's going on nowadays, we can't lose sight of the fresh, original stuff that's happening all the time, you know. And down at the Blue Fugue, we've got a lot of young musicians coming up there for the first time and spreading their wings, and it's just a pleasure to be a part of that. And that's where it goes. We started a sort of a composition competition type thing that's happening, and we're going to talk about that tonight.
All right, yeah. The Fugue, first of all, thanks to them and whoever does these open mic things. I love the fact, you know, it's a Monday night, sort of a, you can go around the country, and Monday night seems to be a good night for open mics in different cities and stuff. But anyway, it's really cool that they do it here. And
yes, it is.
And since you took it over, as a matter of fact, you know, I the listeners know I go to the Fugue pretty much every Monday before I come to do the radio show, and it's sort of like my little hangout, and it's also a great place to get turned on to new and sort of upcoming music around town. But Sam took it over. Well, I shouldn't say took it over, but got involved, I guess, what, 6 months ago, maybe close to a year ago?
Something like that, 6 to 8 months.
Yeah.
Time is not real
good
for me.
No doubt. But anyway,
I'm here, I know that.
Yeah, since you've been there, it has been really, they're doing a great job, and you're doing a great job, and I appreciate your own music that you play once in a while down there for us, and also the stuff that all the young and old alike are bringing to the Fugue on Mondays.
Yeah,
and,
you
know,
exciting.
The, yeah, the Fugue, and, you know, they should be sponsoring this program or something. I'm always plugging that damn bar, and that's a hint, a subtle one,
yeah.
Ben.
Yeah. Yeah,
very
yeah.
subtle hint for Ben and Anthony and
well,
Scott over there.
So happy on Monday.
Yeah, well, sometimes I'm sad, but I fake it well. So anyway, all right. So you, Sam, you there's a contest that's going on or something.
Yeah, January 29th is the culmination of the contest. It's the second time we've done this, and you know, I've all the young songwriters that are there, not all young, shoot, some of them are as old as I am.
Yeah.
Which is really
I've been
old.
In Columbia since 1974.
Whoa.
When this station was just beginning. Myself and David Owens were, I remember him in a long black trench coat and goatee, and he was quite the anarchist.
Yeah,
Abbott
Darkley used to do that show.
And let me tell you, he was one of my sort of, in my mind, an iconic, you know, hero, just to see what he was doing and the character that he was.
That's awesome. Well, he's still a hero to me.
Even absolutely.
He just wears it a little differently these days.
That's
but
right.
He's still
that's
as anarchistic
right.
as ever.
That's
I love
right.
him. So.
That's right.
All right, so tell me, wait.
So January 29th.
Yeah. Okay, back to our contest.
January 29th, and here's the deal. I've challenged everybody to write something for January 29th, and there is a $150 cash prize.
All right.
For this thing, which is footed partly by the Fugue, partly by myself, and Pete Skoka and his recording studio is putting up a couple hours of recording time for second place.
Wow, I mean, that's as valuable or more than
oh,
the money.
Oh, it is,
I mean.
And it's a state-of-the-art.
And Pete's a great guy
studio.
And does a great job with
yes.
people around town.
Yes.
So.
And I remember my first time in the studio with Pete, and I got so nervous I couldn't even, I literally couldn't even pluck the strings to my guitar.
Yeah, there's something about being in behind those walls with that big glass thing in front of you. And you're like, oh, my God, you're actually recording this and listening.
But, you know, Pete walked me right through it and got me right into it. And
he's the most amazing beginner recording experience ever.
Yeah. So that's a real pleasure. He's backing it with us. And basically, You show up the 29th with lyrics in hand, and it's open to poets, to instrumentalists, to rappers, to whatever genre you perform in. And there's different categories for the different levels. We can talk about that. There is a catchword, which is circus. And we ask that circus be in there somewhere. There's what we've brought it down to is there's extra points awarded for including that for including that in your song.
Well, I got to ask, what's the significance of circus, or was it just a random
selection?
There is
no circus; it's just a random selection. We did this once before, and the byword was Monday, and you had to have Monday somewhere. It didn't have to be the title or the subject or anything. It just has to be there somewhere. And it's sort of a I'm an instigator, and it's a way to cause people to perhaps create something for this contest rather than pull something that they've been doing for 12 years.
I got you. Great idea, actually. Okay. Yeah, all right. So anybody's welcome, as long as you're doing some
welcome.
Sort of music, regardless of what type, or even spoken word poetry.
That's right, spoken word, yeah. Becca, last time we divided it into two categories. We had singer-songwriter and
Becca.
Poetry.
Yeah, like one category
and
for Becca. Singer,
yeah.
And then one category for Becca.
And Becca.
We couldn't very well. And we encouraged spoken word poets, whatever, to come down and be a part of Monday nights. We've had comics.
Yes.
We've had stand-up routines. So we've had one-act plays go up there, and we've had everything, and it's all welcome, and it all has a place in this contest, too. Yeah, we had a stripper. Well, that was part of the one-act.
Right.
Yeah. And she was a sight, I'll tell you what.
Oh, man.
But,
all right, so that's 2 weeks from tonight.
2 weeks from tonight.
And is there any pre-registration, anything like that, that has to
There's
go on? You
no
just show up at the bar.
There's no pre-registration happening. This has been in March for some time. We're just now getting to KOPN, and... So there is no pre anything. You show up that night and you're on there. There's no
and the decision goes down that night.
The decision goes down that night. There will be three judges. It's all on. There's six categories and they're all judged on a 1 to 10 scale. And the categories, if I can pull them all out.
What are the judges being paid and who's paying them?
Nobody's paying them. Nobody's paying them.
Oh, I was thinking about federal judges and that sort of thing. Sorry.
No skating.
My mistake.
No skating competition.
Right.
Yeah, no skating competition.
We do have to perform it live, though, that night.
Yeah, it does
have to be performed
live.
All right,
that's
no tapes, no DVDs, no videos on MySpace, none of that.
Okay, so it's content, composition.
Content, poetic composition, performance. Audience appreciation.
Marketability,
but that is according to your genre.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's, all this is all just, and the last category is coolness.
Yeah.
We had to throw that in there.
Sure, you got to be cool these days.
Yeah,
right?
Got to be cool. Got to be
all right,
cool.
Well, look, speaking of cool, why don't you play us another tune, and then I got a few things I got to say to the audience, and then we'll come back and we'll talk a little bit more about you guys and what you're up to, okay? All right, everybody, Sam and Anna D'Agostino. This is Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit. It's KOPN, Columbia.
Well, I remember your body line. The kind of thing to make you lose your mind. Forget your name, forget your place. Forget the fear that you might be erased. And I wonder where you are. Now, and I wonder where you are. Now, and I wonder where you are. Telephone, gramophone, dirty, such a video. So sipping wine, playing it down to your toes. I left you waiting and you left me to die. We're never gonna call it a suicide. Now, well, I wonder where you are. Now, well, I wonder where you are. Can't see your smile in any face.
There's not the kind of thing that can be replaced. You're looking for a strong man to take you on the threshold. And it makes me wish, it makes me wonder why I'm such a mess. Oh.
Now where you are now.
What's the name of that one, Sam?
I Wonder Where You Are.
Wonder Where You Are. All right. Easy as that. All right, everybody.
Simply translated.
It's Mike, and you listen to Radio Orbit. We'll be back in just a few minutes with Sam and Anna, and let me take care of a little bit of business here, okay? All right, everybody. Let's see. First of all, thanks, everybody listening to us this evening on KOPN 89.5 FM or over the web, live or otherwise. Every Monday, we are broadcasting this show from KOPN, beautiful downtown Columbia, Missouri, and we stream the show live via the Cosmic Waves Radio Network on the web at www.cosmicwavesradio.com. And thanks to everybody who makes it happen, live on the radio and on the net. Thanks also to Larry, the web wizard, as always, doing great stuff. Got a couple cool aesthetic changes to the front page, actually, in the last few days. And Larry's always doing something interesting over there on the website. To all the people out there that are sending art and music and poetry as well, thanks. Awesome. Send more. And we'll do our best to share it with other people. And hats off again to Larry for putting it all together out there on the Internet, okay? Check it out. Let us know what you think. Just go over to Mike Hagan, MikeHagan.com. You'll have access to everything we're doing. So take a look-see and share your thoughts with us. The forum, which is one of my favorite parts of the website, has been busy, and there's always interesting topics being discussed over there, actually more than I can sort of keep up with almost lately. Lots of new stuff, and it sort of rolls over into the back pages before you can see it all sometimes. But anyway, great stuff happening there, and there's a live chat, actually, that's up and active right now. We'll peek in there for questions and comments as we go through the program tonight, okay? I encourage all the guests as well as listeners of the program to join us in the chat room during the program. It's great fun, and lots of people there talking about who knows what as the program sort of goes on in the background, all right? If you want to get a hold of me, my email address, orbitradio, O-R-B-I-T, radio at AOL.com, on the web, as I said, MikeHagan.com. And if you want to give me a buzz here sometime during a break and just say hello, the number is 1-800-895-5676, or if you're locally here in the 573 zone, 573-874-5676, okay? All right, tonight, Kent Stedman, as I said, we were going to have Kevin Warwick, the basically the cyborg, cybernetic professor from Reading University in London, but he had to travel. And it's actually great, it worked out great, because we haven't had Kent on the air for a while, and of course, Kent, for those of you who know him, is a solar freak. He's a sun freak, and he studies that star that's up there providing light for us 24 hours a day, whether you see it or not. And the timing is perfect because there's an amazing comet, although you wouldn't know it if you're watching the mainstream outlets for information, but there's been this the brightest comet that's come past the Earth in some 30 years. It was actually visible in the daytime just a couple of days ago from New York City and from here in Missouri, as a matter of fact, too, if you were up on a hill and could see, you know, close to the horizon at sunrise and at sunset. But at any rate, Kent is on the job, and we'll speak with him about the Comet McNaught and a bunch of other stuff that he's sort of researching right now, okay? Next week, Star and Michael, Dr. Michael Heisen, and Star Newland, my two friends who run the Sirius Institute in Pune, Hawaii, doing dolphin and whale communication and language studies there. So amazing stuff that Michael and Star are going to be sharing with us next week. We haven't talked to them in about 6 months, and trust me, Michael's in the middle of all kinds of stuff right now. So we'll have them next week. We've got Jonathan Zapp on the 29th. The 5th of February, John J. Harper, the author of Transformers, Shamans of the 21st Century. The 12th of February, I'm very excited to have the amazing visionary artist Paul Laffoley. Paul Laffoley will be with us live from his studios in California on the 12th of February. If you don't know who Paul Laffoley is, and you know who maybe somebody like Alex Gray is, well, he's, you know, right in the same sort of certainly skill level. I mean, he's an absolute master of the painting art, but also just an absolute mind bender when it comes to what he puts down on canvas. So if you're interested in that, you can find him on the web at Laffoley, LaffoLey.com. Let's see, what else? I haven't put dates on these yet, but check this out, you guys. Judith Ann Brown, I told you briefly, I think, last week about Judith. I'm actually going to interview her Thursday morning, and I'll air it sometime in the next month or two. But she's, of course, the daughter of John Marco Allegro. And John Marco Allegro, for those who aren't familiar, was one of the original translators of the Dead Sea Scrolls. And Allegro had some very interesting things to say about what he believed was included in those ancient manuscripts. And his daughter, Judith Ann Brown, wrote this amazing book called John Marco Allegro, The Maverick of the Dead Sea Scrolls. And we'll speak with Judith Ann Brown about her life and about her father sometime in the next few weeks. I'll bring that to you, okay? Ralph Metzner. If you listen to this program, he requires no introduction. We'll have Ralph Metzner sometime in the next couple of months. And who else? Dale Pendel, still haven't got a date for him. Oh, here's one for you. For the conspiracy-minded folks out there, we'll have Eric John Phelps soon, the author of Vatican Assassins. Man, this is like the ultimate conspiracy. If you're looking for a conspiracy that's just like a, you know, sort of an overarching one that takes care of all the other ones, this is it. Eric John Phelps and the Black Pope and that whole bit. We'll have him on the air sometime in the next, I don't know, probably the next 2 months. I got an email from him that he'd like to do the show just a couple days ago. So anyway, lots of stuff going on, and let's see, I'm looking at the clock here. I think we'll go back and talk to Sam and Anna again for a minute, have them play another song for us, and we'll talk a little bit about their music, and then I've got a few announcements to make, and we'll try to do space weather before the top of the hour when we bring on Kent. So anyway, hey, Anna.
Yes.
And Sam, you know, the name, yes, for people out there that are listening, the D'Agostino name is a pretty familiar one around these parts.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
for,
yeah,
for music and the like, yeah, and good, yeah, food as well. But
yeah, there was a time. Ron is gone now.
It's interesting, though. That was the first I ran across your name, as a matter of fact, because I moved here in 2002. And one of the first places that my wife and I went to have dinner was D'Agostino's.
Oh,
yeah.
Right.
And I thought it was real cool because there was sort of some casual music going on in the back corner,
yeah,
and the food was good, and I don't know. And I think, is it your sister who was running the place?
Yeah, or? Sister Debbie. She
right.
That was her place, and she marched on for a few years and then had to close things down.
Right, right.
But it was quite an experience, and the wonderful food, boy. And even more incredible music sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, it was sort of a gathering place for a lot of stuff,
yeah,
like that, it seemed,
yeah,
like. So, all right, so lots of music in your blood and all that stuff. Tell us,
yeah,
a little bit about
John and Debbie have been, a lot of people know them. They've been playing the music circuits around town for years. Debbie's been Debbie D and Mo Betta, and just an incredible singer. She's got her master's in music and blah, blah, blah. She outshines me in so many ways, and more so John. John is, we were siblings growing up, and I've always been jealous of what he's been able to do with music. He's the sort of person that hears a song on the radio, sits down and plays it.
Really?
You know?
Got that kind of an ear, huh? Wow.
And a memory like nothing I've seen. He pulls out songs from our childhood and, you know, old Lou Reed and you name it, and just knows the lyrics and just wonderful.
Awesome. Wonderful. And I heard you sing the first time at the Blue Fugue months ago or whatever, and I told your dad.
At the Blue Note.
The first time I heard you was at the Fugue,
yeah,
and I remember telling your dad, man, Anna needs to sing more.
Yeah. I didn't sing at all. Actually, if anybody out there is familiar with Suju Forte, she changed my life. I don't know, do I have time to tell a story?
Sure.
I was working at D'Agostino's and sang exclusively in the shower. Exclusively. And she was in the she was in the bathroom. I didn't realize it. I was cleaning the mirrors.
Hi, Chris.
I was cleaning the mirrors, and she comes out of the. I was singing Somewhere Over the Rainbow to myself, and she comes out of the stall. And if you know her, she's like, "Oh my God!"
Oh, yeah, she's
wild,
yeah.
Oh, she goes nuts. She's like, "You have to sing that. You have to get on stage. You're at the Agostino." And I was like, "No, I really don't sing." And I argued and argued with her, and basically completely turned her down flat, and was like, "You're crazy, ladies." And then I was up there doing my thing, hostessing, and she's sitting at the freaking piano, and she's like, "Tonight we have a brand new D'Agostino to the stage," and she started playing the intro to Somewhere Over the Rainbow, and I was like, no.
Is that right?
And she's like, "Anna D'Agostino," and everybody started clapping, and I was so embarrassed, and I, after a couple of minutes, it was more embarrassing to not go up there than it would have been just to go up there.
Right, right.
Because everybody was making such a big deal, so I went up there, and she transposed it for me in a matter of seconds and played it where I could sing it, and I sang it the only way I knew how, and everybody...
And brought down the house.
Everybody freaked out, and I never looked back, I guess.
Awesome. And, well, that's a great story.
Yeah.
And it's a great... Yeah, thank you to Suit, you know, for pulling people out of their shells like that.
Yeah,
it's an important thing for people that can.
Yeah.
And, you know, and as a matter of fact, Sam, it's a little bit like what you do at the Fugue, because they're young musicians, you know, or people that are trying to, you know, express themselves through that way more than they have.
Well, that's
whatever.
What happens so many times.
You give them the opportunity.
Of course, the change in semester and school year brings on new people every time, and so many of them are getting up there for the first time publicly. There's a couple of guys that were there tonight. Corin something and Clay. There's my memory. They came up last week, and they're just freaking good, and it's the first time they're on stage, and they've come back since. And,
was that those two guys that were doing some harmonies?
They're early tonight,
uh-huh.
You know, and it's just exciting to see that happen. These guys were experimenting for the first time, playing publicly, and they've got real talent, and they'll go on from here.
And when you've got somebody to tell you that, it means everything.
It does. It makes a huge difference.
Well, that's what I do, too. And they've come to understand that when I tell them something, I mean it. And I try and be as objective as I can just to give them pointers for what's the next thing they need to do to get their act tighter and better. And
Must be that sort of a night. The guy that I'm talking to at midnight is my guy.
But is that right?
Yeah, he's one of my best friends. He's my
you-can-do-it
guy.
Cool, yeah. Cool.
Right?
Yeah.
Trophy man.
Yeah, that's for sure. So, all right. Well, let's. You want to play another tune?
Sure, I'd love to.
All right, let's do it. Everybody, oh. Sam and Anna D'Agostino. Now, Anna, are you guys doing any sort of marketing for your music? You got a MySpace or anything like that? Well, I think you do. We got Sam's new MySpace page. We'll tell people about it after the song, and then he'll have to update it. Okay. All right. It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit. This is Sam and Anna.
This is Man of Constant Sorrow, which we have sort of adulterated and made our own. I am a man,
I am a man
of constant sorrow.
I've seen trouble
all my days. I'll bid farewell to all misery, the place where I was born and raised. Goodbye.
All through this world,
I'm bound to ramble through sun and wind, and pouring rain. I'm bound to ride that northern railway, perhaps I'll take the very next train. Goodbye.
trouble from a dark cloud storm. Well, I burn my bridges as I walk by. I need a fire just to light my sky. Again and again, I need a place to cry. Gonna burn my soul to say goodbye, goodbye.
That's Man of Constant Sorrow. It's the old
that's a cover. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a cover. It's one of the few we do. Everything we do is original for the most part. But that one, this came to me with the St. Louis Riverman, tattered and torn, strong, broad shoulders, and sorrow born.
All right. Okay. All right. Let me say KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. Now, this is Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit. And we've got Sam and Anna DiAgostino in the studio with me. I got my friend Chris Perkins here behind me as well. Sorry to say your last name on the air. I hope nobody raids the place. Let me do something real quick here. I'll tell you guys about a couple announcements that I need to make. And then how many more you got in your bag? You got a couple more? All right. We'll have probably at least two more from Sam and Anna. And Sam and Amma Ding Dong. Anyway, before I lose too much control, we'll have them in just a minute. It's Mike, and you're listening to Radio Orbit. All right, announcements. Kurt Gödel. I've been trying to do this thing on the show lately when people who I think are interesting or of note have sort of anniversaries. I'm going to try to mention them on the air. So anyway, Kurt Gödel. On the 14th, yesterday, of 1978, as a matter of fact, 29 years ago, passed on. Kurt Gödel, if you weren't familiar with him, was an Austrian, he was an Austrian mathematician and a logician. And as a matter of fact, one of the probably most significant logicians of all time, Gödel's work had a huge impact on scientific and philosophical thinking in the 20th century. He was involved with guys like Bertrand Russell and Alfred North Whitehead when they were trying to figure out and understand the foundations of mathematics. But Gödel is best known for what were called the incompleteness theorems, published in 1931. He was only 25 years old. He had just finished his doctorate in Vienna. And this is why it's important, okay? By the way, it was originally published in Principia Mathematica. Again, that's why I mentioned Bertrand Russell and Alfred North Whitehead. But at any rate, Kurt Gödel, his brilliant contribution to theoretical mathematics was where he showed that the possible set of true formal statements generated by any formal system was greater than the possible set of true formal statements which the rules of the system allowed. I'm trying to say this without a bunch of fishy mathematical jargon, but basically Gödel showed that there are things that can arise within a system that cannot be predicted by the rules of the system. And he demonstrated this with simple arithmetic, but it's clear that the demonstration can be given for any theory and language of expressiveness. So this is similar, I think, to what they call the Liar's Paradox. You ever hear of the Liar's Paradox? It's you can generalize it sort of for all language or symbolic systems. It's basically a standard riddle of a man who walks up to you and says, I am lying. Right? A paradox arises. Right? Well, this is sort of the same thing that Gödel pointed out. And Gödel's incompleteness theorem has frustrated generations of mathematicians, but today most the math guys will just sort of sidestep it and say, well, it doesn't affect their daily work and this sort of thing. But it is a big deal. It was a big deal because Gödel's incompleteness theorem secured that what was called truth, as it was defined prior to the 20th century, was fully impossible. It showed there was no ultimate closure when you try to describe things. It showed that things can pop up in a system that were never predicted by the rules of that system. This was something that eventually people like Ilya Prigozhin were able to show in the laboratory. Prigozhin did it with chemistry, you know. But they basically were able to show that higher orders of complexity can unpredictably and spontaneously generate from lower states of order. And this is the story, maybe, of us. The story of the talking monkeys. You know, nature and culture and man are like this. Human language is a system that's generated, that was generated out of the necessary formal incompleteness of nature that Gödel points out. But, you see, nature is a self-describing language of genes, of genetics. But it arises out of something that is not formally predicted by its rules and constraints. It is a break of symmetry. And then you get what they call an emergent property. And something new comes into the world. So anyway, Kurt Gödel. All right, here's to him. He died 29 years ago yesterday. James Joyce, my friend Chris sitting behind me here, fan of this amazing writer, I'm sure. James Aloysius Joyce, the amazing Irish writer and poet, died on the 13th of January, 1941, considered one of the most influential writers for sure of the 20th century, and a key figure in the modern novel and the development of it. Finnegan's Wake was, of course, the one that really sticks with me, but Ulysses, of course, was probably what he was best known for. Ulysses was published in 1922, in the UK. Before it was even published here in the States, it was banned. In the First Amendment, freedom-loving, you know, free speech, United States of America, Ulysses was banned in 1921, and the ban was lifted in 1933 for James Joyce's amazing novel, Ulysses. But it was banned here in the States for 12 years, between 21 and 33. And anyway, I could say a lot about James Joyce, but he was amazing, wrote lots of outrageously cool literature based primarily in the streets of Dublin, and sometimes really accurate and precise usage of the landmarks and the streets and the alleyways, and just an amazingly image-ridden and deeply philosophical guy. If you're looking for a psychedelic experience in print, read Finnegan's Wake. I mean, it literally will blow your mind if you can get through it. It requires some persistence, though, if you know what I mean. Like any good psychedelic. Right? Let's see, one more before we do another song here. S. Weir Mitchell, Silas Weir Mitchell, was a physician and a writer. He was born, as a matter of fact. His birthday is today, but it was in 1829. He died in 1914. But he was a doctor who studied lots of disorders of the nervous system in the 19th century, but became a writer later in his life and a philosopher. And speaking of psychedelics, that's why I'm interested in him. He was a contemporary of guys like Havelock Ellis, William James. These were the guys that were out on the edge of drug study and investigation in the late and mid-1800s. They were looking at things like mescaline, hashish, and some sort of obscure visionary compounds that were primarily, of course, natural. This was before the age of synthetics. But anyway, S. Weir Mitchell, an early contributor for sure to the work that continues today by guys like Dennis McKenna, right? Roland Griffiths, Dave Nichols, Stan Grob, lots of others. And by the way, speaking of Dennis, I got a great phone message and an accompanying picture in my email of Dennis McKenna, Dr. Dennis, and Dr. Michael Heisen. Dennis is in Hawaii, as a matter of fact, right now. He was teaching a class for the last couple of weeks called Plants and Human Affairs with Kat Harrison, Terrence's former wife and partner. But anyway, every year, Dennis teaches this class. He just likes to get over to Hawaii in the wintertime is basically what he's doing. But anyway, for two or three weeks, they teach this class, him and Kat. And Michael, of course, and Star are on the Big Island, and that's where the Botanical Dimensions is located and still operates, by the way, even though it's very low on the radar. If you want to get in touch with Kat, you can always get a hold of me, and I can put you in touch with her. At any rate, because people ask about it sometimes. So I'll just give you a P.O. box. That's as much as she's willing to do at this point. So anyway, they get together and they do this class, and Michael Heisen is there. And Michael and Dennis and Star got together for lunch and sort of an informal meeting yesterday. And I got this great picture of Dennis and Michael talking at this table. And, of course, they both have pencils in hand. And I'm thinking, imagine what this conversation must have been like. It had to be absolutely incredible. So really excited to we'll have Michael and Star on the program next week, and we'll pick Mike's brain to find out what him and Dennis talked about, okay? Anyway, all right, so let's get back to a little bit of music here. Sam, sorry about the little break there.
Well, no problem.
And what are you going to play for us?
I'm going to play a Spanish tune, actually.
All right.
By Anna's Grace. I'm going to do a little solo thing.
That's a good song there.
Anna's Grace.
Estoy encontrando con un mundo de caminos y cada cual tiene su luz. Estoy enfrentando con pregunta tras pregunta, pero la luz que me toca, la verdadera, la sincera eres tú. Así que yo te amo, así que yo te quiero también, así que yo te amo, así que yo te quiero también, yeah, yeah, yeah. Diablo habla, y ahí me doy cuenta, es por la gracia que estoy aquí. Y aún por las nubes, la visión se aclara, por eso estoy enamorado de ti. Así que yo te amo. Así que yo te quiero también. Así que yo te amo. Así que yo te quiero también. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Beautiful.
Thank you much.
Incredible. Sharp, wonderful, wonderful stuff. Yeah. All right, let's see here. Sam and Anna D'Agostino with me here in the studio. And if you want to check them out on the web, just hop on over to www.myspace.com/SamIAmTallMan. I remember, don't you worry. How could I forget? And it was yours, Anna, tall woman I am.
No.
I mean,
as well be.
Mine's Anna Dago.
Anna Dago. All right. So, anyway, Anna, and
hey, watch
give me the official. Give me official. MySpace.com/
Anna, A-N-N-A-D-A-G-O.
All right, and Sam's
D'Agostino.
Is...
D'Agostino.
Yeah, D-A-G-O-S-T-I-N-O. D'Agostino. That's how you spell it.
Yeah.
All right, and hopefully we'll have Sam getting some of his music up there on his page.
We got to teach him how to log in first.
Well, I know he figured it out because he sent me an email from there the other day.
Yeah, I did. She set it up for me 6 months ago. About a week ago, I finally figured out how to get there.
That's all right. You know, slow but sure.
It's
slow
like,
but
yeah.
sure. Let's see. You guys, let me do one more little bit of business here, and then we'll do one more song before the top of the hour, okay? And we'll and Sam, we'll go over it again. We'll repeat the information
Wonderful.
About the contest and everything that's going Wonderful. On, okay? All right, everybody. It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit. It's KOPN Columbia. Quickly, space weather here. We'll do a lot of this with Kent, obviously, in a few minutes here, but let me just sort of go over the basics, all right? The people who are interested in watching the comet will have to be in the southern hemisphere today if you want to see it with your naked eyes. The this comet that we're talking about is called P1-2006 McNaught, and it was visible here in the States just a few days ago, but as soon as it wraps around the sun and starts to come around the other side, it is no longer visible in the northern hemisphere. It becomes visible in the southern hemisphere just because of the way sort of celestial things like that work. So anyway, it is visible in the southern hemisphere right now, and it's outrageous. If you look at some of the images that are coming in from people that are taking pictures of it, and the best place to go to see this is Kent Stedman's site, the guy who's going to be on the air with us in 10 minutes here. And you can catch up at www.cyberspaceorbit.com. And, well, I'm not going to say any more about the comet because we'll just leave that to Kent, okay? What else do we have going on, though, in the stars above our heads here tonight? There's a thing they call the summer triangle. It was visible tonight at dusk. It'll be visible tomorrow morning. It involves three stars, Altair, which will be low on the horizon, just north of west, and I should say northeast, north of east in the morning. It was north of west tonight at dusk. But anyway, north of east tomorrow morning, there'll be two other stars involved in this summer triangle, even though it's the middle of winter. They call it Vega and Deneb, or Deneb, the two other stars involved in that triangle. You can see that tomorrow morning. Also, about an hour and a half, maybe hour and 15 minutes before sunrise tomorrow, if you look for the thin crescent of the moon, just look to the low southeast of there. You'll see Jupiter and Antares to the upper right. And you'll all see Mars in the sky at the same time, about 9 degrees to the left of the moon. On Tuesday, well, about actually I should say, you know, Tuesday night, Wednesday morning, early Wednesday morning, you'll be able to see Jupiter wonderfully in the morning sky. You'll have to find the thin crescent moon. It's just about disappearing. We have new moon on Thursday, so it might be difficult to locate the crescent actually within the next few days. But anyway, it's a wonderful sighting of Jupiter in the southeast on Wednesday morning. On Thursday we have new moon, and on Friday, lots of stuff happening up in the sky there. Venus low in the southwest after sunset, and you can find Venus and Mercury not far from Venus, I should say, on Friday evening. What else? The 15th, Comet McNaught. The closest approach to Earth is today, 0.818 astronomical units. This comet that I've been yapping about all night. It's still far away. I mean, it's 80 million miles, you know. But distance isn't always the you know, the only factor. What else do we have going on here? You know, there's always your usual asteroids and comets, and I want to make people aware of the fact that although we're talking about this one comet, there are three other ones that are zipping around right now, too. There's this one P2007A2. There is, 55th. Here's one. They call it Dr. Watson. That's what this one was named. No kidding. Dr. Watson. I presume that's its closest approach happening tomorrow. So, and what else do we have here? Harvey Nininger's 120th birthday. All right, that's right. Then we have another one here, P2006U5, and another comet, 176P Linear, And another comet, 2005 S3. All, there's five different ones that are all in their closest approach to Earth in the next 3 days. That and there's always asteroids and stuff, too. So it shows people how much is really going on up there all the time. You never really hear about it. But, I mean, it's just the solar system is just a wild place, and there's always things just zipping around, and you just don't really hear about it very much. So, anyway, lots going on up there, but we'll catch up with Kent with what's happening up there in space in just a few minutes. So we got a few minutes left here with our guests, Anna and Sam DiAgostino. So let's talk with them a few more minutes. And you guys, let's go over for the people who didn't tune in right at the beginning of the program.
Yeah,
let's talk about why you're here.
For the composition contest that we got going, Kevin Walsh, is it?
Sure.
He coined it best for me, the composition competition.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's the first competition we did was last year, and it was just singer-songwriters and poets. And I realized that it really needed to be open up to any artistic venue. And so, singer-songwriters, rappers, poets, spoken word, instrumentalists. I'd like to see that too.
What if you got a full band?
Full band.
Man, we got
full band.
And how much time do we got to fit all this in?
I tell you what, it goes the farthest we've broadened it is from 8 o'clock till 1 o'clock.
So they close, right? Is there a limit on entries?
No, there's no limit on entries. And generally, what we do is somebody gets up there, I give them space to do two songs so they can, or two poems, whatever, so they can kind of get their feet wet with something and then present their competition piece. And like I said, it's $150 first prize. Second prize is 2 hours recording time in Pete Skoka's recording studio. Third prize is 1 hour recording time, Pete Skoka's recording studio. And so there'll be three judges on with a 6-point judging standard with
composition,
content. First off.
Poetic
composition, performance, audience appreciation, marketability, which is strictly according to your genre,
mm-hmm.
And then coolness.
Yeah, coolness.
There's the last one, and those are all on a 10-point scale.
Bring your
and
shame.
There are there are extra points awarded for including the word circus in what you compose.
What you enter.
That can be in the title. That can be in the body. It doesn't have to be the subject in any way, shape, or form.
Just the word.
I just like to see what you can do with it.
The last contest, the word was Monday, and there was the one guy that did his whole song, and then at the end was like, Monday.
And that worked. Yeah. That worked. What can I say? You know, you got the poetic license.
All right.
In a real way.
All right. Well, so that's what it is, everybody. Next, let's see, 2 weeks from tonight, Monday the 29th at the Blue Fugue. Get down there and bring your stuff. And you got a chance to, not only is it money and maybe some studio time, but you also can make some connections. You can network with some other people that are doing
the
thing.
I'll tell you what, that's been one of the best parts for me is networking with other musicians and getting my groove out there and seeing what I can do with it. And that's what the other folks are doing, too.
Right on.
It's a beautiful thing. And I tell you what, to have a format like the Blue Fugue where you can go and do whatever the freaking you want to, it's a beautiful
thing.
They are
so accommodating.
They are wonderful hosts for allowing us to do that, and I can't give them enough kudos.
I agree with you fully.
You know,
I agree.
Everybody that comes up on to experiment is not all that good. And there's a lot of grace from all of us, and as well as for all of us to experience that.
That's right. All right, well, let's have one more to close things out here with you guys, and we'll... We'll catch up with you, okay?
This is called Please.
All right, everybody, Sam and Anna, one more time.
Look at her smile. She's got the peace of God in her eyes, but she don't know why. Look at him try. He's got the shoulders of Atlas. Saying please, begging you, please, wanting you, please, begging you,
smile. He's got a bottle of wine and love on his mind. You're saying, please, 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 please.
Listening.
You bet. Thank you for being here, and we'll catch up with you next week at
cool.
the Fugue. And everybody, one more time, the 29th, 2 weeks from tonight.
Yeah.
Get involved in the composition.
Yeah, please do it. And everybody, come down to Monday nights. It's a good thing to hear, a good thing to experience.
No doubt. All right, you guys, take care of yourself, all right?
Thank you.
You're listening to Radio Orbit with Mike Hagan on KOPN 89.5 FM.
Alright, his name is Kent Stedman. He is the brilliant heart and mind behind CyberspaceOrbit.com. That's as much introduction as he requires on this program, at least. If you're not familiar with him, get familiar. Do that at CyberspaceOrbit.com. Kent Stedman. Hello, my friend.
Howdy, 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 howdy.
How are you?
Oh, man, I'm tired. I've been up all night for comet time.
Yeah.
For 4 days. So this will task you as a host. You got to help straighten me out here.
Hey, what's new?
One question at a time.
Yeah.
Well, what's new? Hey, I better submit my musical composition.
Hey, it's the composition competition. Get in it.
Ready?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to strum my guitar, which is hanging on the wall, so I don't have to play the damn thing.
All right, I'm recording right now, so.
Ready?
Yep.
I love my horse. Wait a minute. And he loves me, of course. Like that?
I love it.
But you got to sing it over and over and over for it to really start to resonate, you know.
Well, you didn't.
I love my horse, and he loves me, of course.
You got to put in the word circus, though.
Oh, well, it's a circus horse.
Ah, damn. That's the name of the song, the circus horse, of course. Well, I can tell you have been up for 4 days. But
yeah.
I can also tell when I go over there to your website and I start peeking around. I can tell you've been really busy. There is all
yeah,
kinds
yeah,
of stuff
if
happening.
If you got to have a computer, you aren't going to get it. So if you don't have a computer, go quick. We'll wait.
Just
for
turn
a minute.
Us off right now.
We'll wait for a minute, and you go buy one.
Yeah, go buy one. Come back in 20 or 30 minutes and get back on with us. or just turn the radio off, and then every 20 minutes turn it on. You can hear a song. Anyway, well, yeah, the pictures are worth many, many words for sure in this case. Okay, let's start from scratch. From people who aren't familiar, let's tell people, first of all, a little bit about this comet. Who is it? Where is it? Where did it come from? How long have we known about it?
Well, it's only been known about since, oh, man, where's my mouse fell on the floor. Come here, mouse. Here, boy.
That's not a mouse for his computer. That's his pet that he's talking about, everyone.
Still lost. There it is.
Like June or July of
last
year.
Yeah, June or July this year by Mr. McNaught.
Yeah, Robert McNaught.
Which means McNothing. He does. Our druid friend who's sitting here on my IM, backing me up here, he's from that part of the world. And he says McNaught means zero.
Yeah, not for sure. Zippo.
Yeah, so anyway, we get the word that this big hairy beast is coming, flying through the sky. A lot happening in the heavens, not much happening down here on Earth. It's all, the scene is up there.
Hmm.
And, we got the word about the 6 months ago. And here it came, started coming in the last few days. It began to appear on the SOHO cam. Now the SOHO telescope is a million miles out there staring at the sun. And it began to appear, and then all kinds of things started happening. It was the biggest comet I've ever seen on SOHO. It's not necessarily the biggest visible comet that we've ever seen on Earth. It's one of the brightest. It's a daytime comet. You can see it during the day. Brightest comet in 30 years or something like that. Prior to that, 1965, there was a comet that was something like 24 times brighter.
Than this one?
Yeah, comet, 1965 IKEA Seki comet.
And that's one nobody even knows about.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of comets back then.
And it was
that
25
was a southern
times
comet. That was a southern comet. They saw it in Oz.
Uh-huh.
So
and it was 25 times larger than this one, though. Or
not
large,
brighter. That's a really complicated
thing. Yeah, nobody knows how big these things are.
Not larger. It just got closer to the sun, much closer, like 0.008 AUs or something like
right,
that.
Right, real close, all right.
So as a result, it really fried that sucker, and it sent a big tail out. So it was 25 times brighter, visibly, optically. We don't know how large this is, actually. I haven't nailed down what the size of the core is on this. I've heard various opinions, one from Perth that says it's 10 kilometers across. Well, that doesn't sound too impressive. I've read that it's 100 kilometers, the core. But the fact is, what we're seeing is an entity that's about a third of the size of the sun, including the core and the coma around it.
Right, and this isn't really the tail. This is just that sort of
the
ball that you see at
the
front end.
Ball.
Right, right. I mean, it's just gigantic.
Now, that's impressive in my book because, I mean, we got Jovian planets in orbit around the sun that are big bags of gas when you think about it, you know. And we call them the monsters, the Jovian planets, Jupiter, Saturn.
Right, the gas giants, right.
The gas giants. And we attach quite significance to their size. Well, we should for this comet, too. It's a third of the size of the sun, including the gas and the ion emanation coming from it, and let alone the tail, which is many, many times the size of the sun.
And what's in the tail? I mean, that we've talked about this before. Who knows what's lurking in the tail?
I've got a thing on my side. It says composition. If you click on it, you'll see that the tail consists of an ion streamer, and that's what we see mostly. That's the bright thing. But fanning out on either side, kind of like the wings of a beetle, is the particle matter, the dust that's shooting off this thing. And when we say dust, that ranges from dust to house-sized chunks, you know.
Right.
And I have one model here a guy made that speculates on whether the Earth itself will go through the dust cloud. Now, the ion tail, it won't pass through that. But the dust matter sort of fans out in either direction on either side at a steeper angle.
Right. I got the image up here now, too. Uh-huh. People, if you're interested in this, go to Kent's page and page down about a third of the way, and there's a sort of reddish, orangish, yellow image on the left-hand side of the page, and you'll see it's in a box. And just to the right of there, you'll see a link that says Earth in Dust Tail. Go look at that image.
Now, I'm not a really cooked scientist. I'm not a scientist myself, thank God. And I have a tendency to see these things through a lot of different screens as they approach. My academic background is in the humanities, and so I look at it through the left brain, the scientific thing, but also through the myth.
Mm.
The myth aspect, and the comets have always had strange myths attached to them, and in the West they've sort of been harbingers of doom. Well, that's all right with me. You know.
Why did you say in the West? Is there a different tradition that looks differently at comets in different parts of the globe?
I believe so. I think they've been considered anything from angelic to you know, like the early Byzantine sort of Christian thing attached to sort of an angelic symbol to the comet. And they either thought that comets themselves were like angels, or that the angels followed them in. See? And then you have the dragon myth, Quetzalcoatl.
Right,
the feathered serpent, the dragon, which I think is Chinese, and back into the Aztec Empire and so on, they thought of them as dragons. It may be where the concept of dragon came from in the first place.
Huh.
So I look at the myth, too. Scientific theories don't last nearly as long as myths do.
Yeah, scientific theories get kicked around every 50 years or so, and they say, you used to be at the top of the heap, now you're in the shite pile. So much, and string theory is just about to experience that, if you haven't noticed, but which I love. I just love seeing scientific theories fall. I was talking about Kurt Gödel. Basically, this Kurt Gödel guy was great because he basically just pulled the rug out from mathematicians, and he was a mathematician, but I also think of this great old quote from, I think it was Niels Bohr, who said, if somebody can explain to you how quantum physics works, they don't understand it.
Now we got this new membrane universe theory.
Yeah, the big fishy jellyfish theory, I guess. So who knows?
Well, it's cool. I like it.
Yeah, you like that one better than the last one.
Yeah.
It's more hip, you know.
But I like to think out of the box, which means I'm not hostage to scientific method, which is one method of many.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, the comet gets closer and closer and closer, and then all kinds of weird things start happening, whether they belong to the land of Narnia or to JPL, I don't know who it belongs to, but the comet gets closer and suddenly we're getting reports around Earth that there's all this kind of methane gas leaking out of the ground. People are shutting off their pipeline. Ships at sea are saying that there's methane is bubbling out of the ocean.
We had a big quake. We had a big earthquake.
Yeah, it gets closer. We got an 8.2 quake.
It's a big earthquake, man. that freaked everybody out for a little while. They had the whole tsunami warning thing going off and everything, and for a short period of time, everyone was, you know, grabbing their pants.
And the comet, the images we're seeing on the SOHO are strange, too, and I don't have a, there might be a an imaging artifact answer to all this, but the C2, which is another cam on the, there are several cameras on the SOHO space probe, and one of them is the C2, and it's an enclosed, narrower zoom. We didn't see the comet on it, but the SOHO started developing these like rings, like you throw a stone in a pool, and you get concentric waves coming out, rings. It began to develop these rings, and I put the question out to my sleuths, well, what the heck is that, you know? And I got answers that were sort of quantum-like that I didn't totally understand, the outside effect of a gravitational force on the sun, that type of thing. I had a guy say, well, that's sound waves. And I can relate to that due to my composition here.
Well, regardless of what it is, there's some sort of effect that's obvious, or these strange wave phenomenon that seem to be coming from the surface of the sun.
Yeah, well, the sun was singing. Unless it was an image art. Some sort of image thing. But the thing is, the comet's zoomed down south now past the sun. It's gone off the C2 frame. It's already gone past. The show is... as far as the space camera is, the curtain's gone down, it's finale. But and now the rings are gone off the C2. It's gone back to normal. The comet was also so bright that it was casting like an anti-comet, 180 degrees opposite the sun. There was this bright spot, and I guess that's some sort of lens reflection. I'll cop to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, something up there, yeah, on the, exactly 180 from on the C3 image this time, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see what
you could watch
about.
It. You could watch it, it.
Did it move accordingly?
Yeah, it moved accordingly, like right across about this, an exact distance across on the other side. I guess that was some sort of lens phenomenon.
On the Kent, on the image that you have pretty much right at the front, at the top of your front page, there's a the comet is blazing by on the left-hand side.
Yeah.
There's what appears to be a relatively bright star to the right of the comet's trail. What is that?
That's let's see.
That's the planet Mercury.
Yeah.
And so
no, they're not coming close to one another. They're on opposite sides of the sun.
Okay, so it's sort of deceptive as far as you can't really compare the two to one another.
Well, if you've watched Mercury transit,
I've seen Mercury, Venus, whatever transit, and
they're often a lot brighter, showing out the big
right, but still nothing like this comet.
That's because Mercury is not in a highly reflective position right now. It's whereas we've seen it in the past, it throws out these huge CCD wings, horizontal spikes like we're seeing on the comet, which is that's like lens flash, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so Mercury is rather unassuming, and the comet and Mercury, unless there's a tail, comet tail effect, which I'm not sure of at this point.
Hey man, let me ask you something. That's sort of left turn.
Oh yeah.
I had this guy Rick Levine on the program on New Year's, and he's really cool. But he's an astrologer of sorts, right? But he's also a scientist. He comes from a scientific background, but he loves to look at the movement of the stars and the planets, and primarily the planets and the moon and the sun. But in your experience, and you know a lot about this weird esoteric stuff, how do comets affect that sort of stuff? I mean, do people get excited when comets come around for esoteric reasons?
Well, yeah, historically, yes, it freaks them out, and they're freaking out now.
Well, let's talk about it a little bit. What do you mean it freaks them out?
Well, it's just an unusual apparition that shows up in the sky. And if you're sort of out there living close to the Earth and have a lot of opportunity to check out the sky, if you're in a farmer, you know, have to do that a lot and see what's going on up there. And suddenly you see this big blazing thing with a tail on it.
Hmm.
What do? You go, wow.
Okay.
And this apparition has, like I mentioned a while back, has for many people portended something is about to happen, you know. There have been comets that appeared, then wars break out, and so on and so forth. Of course, that isn't going to happen. Now there are no wars breaking out on Earth, no.
Well, they've all broken out. So.
Of course, there's always a stupid war breaking out.
Right.
But just go out and look at the comet. What do you feel?
Right. That's what it is for me more than anything. I mean, I tend to not really attach negative or positive, you know, meaning to this thing. But it could be either, I guess. I mean,
okay. Well, here's a note I got. It says my husband, a native elder, sensed the comet last evening. He sensed it. He felt something was going on. That's how stuff is happening to me. He sensed the comet last evening and went to the window. He called me to see it, and I almost panicked. It was between two mountains and looked so large that I thought it was Nibiru. And we had only days left to prepare for whatever. This morning, with clear skies, the whole family saw it for some time. It was amazing. Looked huge still and not so ominous as last night. I must say, though, it does portend many changes in this paradigm. We feel. As natives, we rarely give in to fear, but as a mother, I panic at the thought of some of my children being in large cities at this time.
Hmm. Well, I wonder why it's always associated with something nasty.
It isn't. I think it is in the Western world, for reasons I'm not sure of. We'll have to time travel and go back and look at some comets, see what happens next.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there are.
It's just spooky.
Well, it's,
right?
And it's also sort of like, you know, if, you know, history
looks
is
like a snake in the sky.
Yeah, but there's also, you know, deep time. You know, history. You know, the history we talk about is 5,000 years or whatever, 10,000 years, whatever. But I mean, the Earth goes back a long, long time prior to that. You got to imagine that there were times in the past when comets had close approaches to the planet and caused mayhem, but you can also imagine, you know, the flybys that were more wondrous. I mean, I look at these ones, like this one in particular. It reminds me, to be honest, it reminds me of Hale Bopp, because I could see it, you know what I mean? I could clearly see it in the night sky. And to me, it was just sort of like wondrous. I didn't really have any fear response to it. It's just like, whoa, that's so cool.
Yeah, I like them.
But I mean, maybe it means something more than that. I don't know. Who knows? Everything means.
Well, you
more
know,
than
comets apparently have kicked up a lot of trouble down on the planet, like the big blast in Tunguska.
Yeah.
Apparently, cometary. And they even say either what was it, the Chicago Fire or the San Francisco Fire, some believe, was cometary.
What, started by some impact or something?
Yeah, some going through the tail or something. I'll have to reread all that again, that history, but I know that it's out there. Go on Google and say comets and Chicago Fire, and it'll pop up. And if we go through the dust, the cometary dust, then it's going to impact the Earth. We're going to have a lot of fireballs screaming in.
Yeah, and, you know, maybe we can talk about this later, but we also have the issue of organic material.
True. Meteors. What are meteors?
Yeah.
Most of the meteors that storms that we observe are a result of comets dusting that particular plane in the solar system, sometimes eons ago, and we come around and go through it every once a year.
Hmm.
when I see a comet hanging out there, I think it's quite beautiful. Quite beautiful. Although I haven't seen it yet. Now, they say you can see it in the daytime by blocking out the sun. Be careful. Don't look into the sun for very long. But if you block off the sun, even space weather is saying do it at noon.
Right, right, right. Hold something up to block the sun.
Block the sun and look a few degrees to the...
to the left.
To the left and slightly south.
Right. Now, but you got to be in the southern hemisphere right now, right?
No. This is advice they're giving to the northern hemisphere.
So we could still see it up here.
Yeah, well, it just passed perihelion.
Right, it just went around the sun.
Yeah, so it's close to the sun. So it's following the sun.
Ah, so the issue isn't one of line of sight. The issue is one of sunlight.
Now, yeah.
Okay.
But even with the sunlight, people are blocking off the sun by looking at using a piece of the neighbor's house to block off the sun, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They can still see the comet at noon. Gives you an idea how bright this beast is.
Wow, here's one from Manhattan, too, that was taken a few days ago. Incredible. Yeah, some great imagery, by the way, as well. If you go over to Kent's site, like I say, he's got all this stuff up there. Cyberspaceorbit.com, and there's one other site that I follow quite a bit. This is Space Weather, and they've got some pretty good imagery over there too, Kent. They've got a whole gallery of stuff from, you know, people that are sending stuff into them as well. So
now here's something interesting. We've got a friend. He's a friend of yours and mine. I'll call him the Druid because he doesn't want his name blasted. But he's been digging deeper, down deep through the layers of the Soho Lasco files on the internet, and he's found a whole source of Soho imagery which is far more profound than what we get to see, what the public gets to see. And if you scroll down from my top page and go down to the next huge frame, you'll see what he's finding. It says in yellow letters, in reality they are taking pictures every 12 minutes. And the image is a lot different than what we're seeing in the blue frame above. Can you see it?
I can see it, yeah. And, you know, this is going to...
Now, this was taken on the 13th. On the 13th, we only saw part of that, kind of like half of it.
Well, it also clears up a mystery for me. You know that? Because I got an email from a guy, and he said, Mike, I found a .mil site that contains Soho images, but these images are 10 times clearer and in original astrodata files. They are taking pics between 9 and 12 minutes rather than the public one-hour shots, and I'm seeing loads of pieces falling into the sun.
Yeah,
this is probably the same guy. I didn't know who it was, but it's your guy, I bet.
Yeah, and you can see pieces falling into the sun on this image. So they're seeing stuff that we aren't seeing so far.
That's a big surprise, huh?
And look at the perspective on this thing. It's a lot different perspective than the wide angle Lasco C3, the big blue frame at the top. It's like it's pan out or zoom out.
Right, and it's more of a grayscale image or something. I don't know.
Well, they all are in their raw state, and then they add various filters.
Oh, that's where you get some of these colors and stuff.
That's where you get the colors, but what we're seeing here is way panned, way back out. You know, as though there's a camera, I think, on the spacecraft. There must be a separate camera doing this.
Very interesting.
How are they getting this wide field image and simultaneously taking it? I don't know. Maybe they're just...
Well, I'm sure...
Maybe it's the same cam with different interpretations.
Well, they all visit your site, so maybe one of them out there at JPL or NASA can send us a note and let us know what this is, because we got questions about it for sure. How often are they really taking shots and all this stuff? Yeah, who cares what's new? We've done that before. So, all right, look, it's the bottom of the hour. Let's take a break, okay?
Okay.
All right, man. Hey, everybody, hi, it's Mike, and we got Kent Stedman. Live with us from the cave in Seattle, www.cyberspaceorbit.com. You can link there directly from my site or hop on over there yourself. And we'll be back with Kent in just a couple of minutes here. You are listening to Radio Orbit. It's KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM, about 12:30 now on the 16th of the 16th of January. Man, the time flies, and we're already halfway through the first month of the year here. We'll play a song here from my friends from Brooklyn. They're called Ism, and this is called Monkey Underneath. It's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia. All right, everybody, it's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit. That's Ism. And the title track from their relatively recently released CD called Monkey Underneath. One of my favorite bands that came out in the last year or so. And one of my favorite people that's come out in the last year or so, well, maybe the last 15 years or so, is Kent Stedman. And he's with me from his pad in Seattle. And we'll get right back to him. Hey, Bartle.
Cold here.
Man, it's colder than blue blazes here. Sheesh.
It's freaking everybody. All the citizens of Seattle are freaking out because we're not used to enduring winters, and now we've had snow on the ground for a week and a half.
Wow, it's weird. It's happened to my friends in Colorado. They've seen snow like they haven't seen in a long, long time, but combined with that, they're having, you know, normally in Colorado, it gets warm. The sun comes out within a day or two after it snows, and the snow goes away. This year, that's not happening. They got snow everywhere. They don't know what to do with it. We got snow again tonight.
Yeah. Snow tomorrow night, and it's going to snow Friday. So, you know, I like it because I'm a Utah boy. That's the way it was.
Right. We got ice here in Missouri. You couldn't believe what happened here in the last 3 days. There's literally, you know, 4 or 5 inches of, like, solid ice. People can't even walk across, you know, they can't get out of their house. A guy I work with said that he walked out of his house onto the front porch, stepped off the front porch, and slid all the way into his street. And he couldn't get back into his house because his front yard's on a little bit of a slope, and he couldn't walk back up it. He had to go all the way around the block and go in through the backyard.
Hey. When we were kids, we used to do that on purpose.
I love it, yeah.
Hey, we go to school. There was a hill there at my grade school, man. That was the big deal. That was an Olympic competition to slide down that foot slide that we got and see if you can survive it.
Oh, I know.
And we used to bumper hitch. Ever do that?
Sure. We called it skitching.
Yeah.
And you'd grab the bumper and the guy pulled you around, sliding around. And then you'd hit a patch that didn't have any ice and just trash your yourself terribly.
Or flipping Brodies, we used to call it that. I mean, if you got a car, what do you do with a car?
Flipping Brodies? What is that?
Well, you got a car and it snows, you got an icy road, what do you do? I mean, you don't drive carefully. You go down Walker Lane, which is a steep hill, and then you hit your brakes. And you turn your wheel really sharply one way and see how many times you go around.
Oh,
and if you go around 3 times, you win.
All right. That's a flip. That's a triple Brody, I guess, or something. How funny. All right. Hey.
But you know, you don't suppose a comet might do that, do you?
Hey, you know,
how's that for tying back into the comet?
Yeah, I mean, why not? I mean, I look at all, you know, I have such an animistic view of the cosmos. I mean, I think everything's alive.
Well,
you know?
Dust, man, dust.
Yeah, who knows?
See if it gets dusty. Go out and look at your car tomorrow and the next day and over the week and see if there's any of this red dust.
I always think about what's in the dust, you know, microbes or chemicals or things that, you know, could interact with our environment. I mean, who knows where those things have been or where they came from.
Talk about how myth meets matter right now. I mean, what's that term called where they think that comets are perhaps the great inseminators?
Ah, they call it panspermia. They call it panspermia, yeah, that comets are sort of like, and I mean, they sort of look like a sperm, you know? I mean, if you think about it, it's a big cosmic sperm.
Really? And the material that travels our way.
Yeah, and for people out there who think we're spinning yarns, which we always are, this is a legitimate cosmic seeding theory. People that talk about exobiology and the way that life might be spread across the universe... This is a legitimate theory. Guys like Fred Hoyle is one that comes to mind, but other people for sure. And it's a legitimate scientific theory. It's called panspermia, and it basically says that comets are these cosmic interlopers that cruise around the galaxy and the universe, and sometimes they impact with planets and sometimes they interact with other bodies out there. And when they do that, they pick up material. from the bodies that they interact with. And then when they interact with another body, they can deposit that material. I mean, it makes perfect sense, basically. You know, a comet brushes by the Earth, it's going to grab some of the Earth. Now, if you have an impact, you know, think about it, Bardo. I mean, if you have a comet that smashes into the Earth, maybe it's a glancing blow and the comet isn't completely destroyed, but it actually hits the Earth, a whole lot of debris from the Earth goes up into the air and into the atmosphere and then gets dragged along right with the comet as the comet moves along its way. I mean, this is the way they describe it, at least.
Well, some of our Jason Society chiefs and so on, the thinking guys, they've talked about terraforming worlds by lassoing a comet, Yeehaw, Pecos Bill, you know, and move it in toward, like, Mars.
Direct it toward a planet or something?
Yeah. Water. Of course, assuming that the comets always contain a lot of water.
Mm. And there's argument about that, though, these days, too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Let's talk about that for a second. The electric model as opposed to the dirty snowball model.
Well, they're not necessarily at odds. I mean, you have both.
Mm.
You have both. I mean, comets do, apparently. I think it's fairly well established, at least in my pea brain mind, that there is a lot of water contained within comets. But there's, you know, science, especially, you know, there's a group of astronomers that hung out in an observatory in the French Alps that found out that Hale-Bopp contained a lot of heavy elements. And you can go to there, that archive is still available on the web. You can go and see what they found out. That was the beginning of sort of a rebel movement, actually, because for some reason, this model of the dirty snowball, I mean, people have been clinging to that. It almost seems almost Neanderthal to me in a way, in terms of a frame of thought, you know, that it has to be that way. But they belong to a group, the Pic de Bure Observatory.
That's the whole gang that died.
Huh? No. The whole gang, what happened to them? They're dead.
Yeah, they were in a gondola in, what, 1999 maybe, or something like 98? And 20 of them or something fell in an absolutely bizarre...
And the whole team did.
Everyone. And it was never really clearly explained or covered by the press. I mean, this was a major deal with a whole bunch of very prominent astronomers that all died in the same incident.
Yeah,
fell down from, and it was like dramatic, right?
Mm-hmm. The tram went down.
Yeah, in a gondola
and
car.
And it's. I don't know what the investigation brought up, but there was a serious investigation because that equipment had been inspected, you know, a month prior.
Yeah, I was going to say just a few weeks earlier it had been maintained or certified or whatever.
And up in the Alps, that type of equipment is very common, you know. It's used all the time.
Oh, man. I mean, I lived in Colorado for 16 years, you know. I mean,
you don't hear about gondolas.
No. And, I mean, that stuff, if you see how those things are actually built and operate, there's something really, really wrong has to happen for one of those cars to fall.
And, you know, I found out, I rechecked that story again last week, and I found out that shortly afterwards, the replacements for the team were going on up in a helicopter to the observatory, and the helicopter went down and killed a whole bunch more of them.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, so the great Odin, he doesn't like comet guys.
Huh. Whoa. That's
Shoemaker, Gene Shoemaker.
Gene Shoemaker, yeah, Gene Shoemaker.
Yeah, he went down, too, and out by Pine Gap, out by the secret, super secret.
In New York?
No, a facility in Australia.
Oh, gosh, that's right. He was run off the road, and they killed him. Somebody killed him.
So don't be a comet astronomer.
And Shoemaker, Gene Shoemaker, all kind. I mean, he not only did he discover the Shoemaker Levy 9, the one that smacked into Jupiter back in 1994, which was remarkable, but he discovered a whole bunch of other ones, too. Him and his wife, they were an amazing team. I'd like to talk to her. Is she still around?
Yeah. Did she go to that?
No, I think she
were
maybe...
Were they together in there?
Somebody find out if Gene Shoemaker's wife is still alive and send me an email. Man, oh, man. Anyway,
we got to track down this discoverer of this comet too, McCanny.
Robert McNaught.
Yeah, McCanny has put up a big thing. I got a link to McCanny's blog on this, and he thinks he feels some sort of element of strangeness in the way this comet was parked out beyond Jupiter all this time, and all of our systems that we have in space now to detect NEOs and anything incoming, they all failed, you know.
Yeah, McCanny writes, he questions, you know, how we couldn't have known about this.
Yeah, why? Now, we need to track down this guy, McNaught. He's a professional astronomer, and I got...
You got a link to his website, actually, right?
Yeah, no, but I got a rumor that he's involved in the Wormwood Project in Australia.
What's the Wormwood Project, for people who don't know?
I don't know.
I don't like the name of it.
I don't know, but the name involves, you know, the concept of wormwood, that which comes to poison all the season. It's a watch, I think, for a incoming body of massive size. Mm-hmm. And here we go back into a myth that's pervading the world right now, and that's the myth, the modern myth of the approach of Planet X.
Hmm. Yeah, that's another question. I mean,
which is, you know, mainstream scientists, every time anybody says PX now, there's always about five guys from bad astronomy in the forum come in to
not
pound
you, water, right?
to pound you about that. But that was a very serious investigation by a guy in the Southern Hemisphere, by a guy named Harrington.
Mm-hmm.
And,
well, Ken, I mean...
And based upon the idea that there's something out there that's perturbing the orbit of the outer planets, the great perturber, you know?
Right. And for the hardcore, snoop around in Kent's archives on cyberspaceorbit.com. You'll find all kinds of very interesting information about Planet X. Now, no conclusive stuff, but just all these different threads that just... weave a very bizarre story. But Ken, you and I had some chats, I remember, you know, that I have actually had saved, where we were digging up all kinds of information that was just stunning, quite frankly, about something that's out there. And of course now, I mean, every week they're telling you that there's something else out there.
Well, we don't know. I mean, even the myth itself and even the serious aspect of it, the things that have been published in the Harvard Planetary Journals and stuff like that by Harrington and others. Very serious consideration of a large body out there somewhere, whether it's a planet. They don't know what it is. Is it a planet? Is it a twin to the sun?
Right, you know, a binary star.
Sun, like a red dwarf. Is it a knot of comets?
Is it a warp in space-time? I mean, you know?
Yeah, well, a lot of our probes that we sent out in the early days seemed to be hitting a wall out there, like the Pioneer, a series of Pioneer space probes, and they go out there and they're hitting some kind of anomaly out on the edge of the solar system, mm-hmm. like a slam against a sort of a shock wave or something like that.
Yeah,
pulling them all down.
Yeah, Paul LaViolette talks about that actually quite a bit. He's
yeah, and I don't know the details on that. So.
Well, that's
good thing for sleuths to sleuth.
Yeah, that's a good sleuth for sure. You know, I'm looking at an image here on your site of...
Oh, no, don't do that.
Oh, this is amazing. Actually, this is beautiful. This is the... Actually, I take it back. This is from Robert McNaught's link, and it's an image from Oslo, Norway.
Oh, yeah.
It's just beautiful. It's
now, you
just
hit that
beautiful.
Link, you can watch the movie. Not just
a picture. Oh, man. It's like twilight, blue sky, sun going down with this beautiful comet right in the middle there. It's just awesome.
Yeah, and there's a movie link somewhere.
Very. I'm going to put this up on the chat.
On a video.
Chat call. Real fast so people can see it here.
There's a video. You go down, put find video comment over Oslo, and there's a beautiful video on YouTube. And if you look to the right of that, after you watch that video, click on all the other ones that are similar on the right-hand column of YouTube, and you'll see people have been very seriously photographing and taking movies of this comet. That's spectacular.
Interestingly, in this country, until the comet was essentially out of view, there was not a word of it. And then...
And not much in mainstream.
And still not much, but I found it really interesting. You know, I use AOL for my email, and as much as people bitch about it, I like it. But anyway, they always have these news stories that are like at the front page of AOL, and those are always funny to look at too, because you can sort of see where what the recent propaganda is. But at any rate. You know, they wait until the event is pretty much past its prime in the northern hemisphere here, and then they tell you, the brightest comet in 30 years just went by. Look what you missed. That's actually how they present the story. Look what you missed. Right?
You can still see it, folks.
Right, you can still see it, first of all, but I just think it's an interesting cultural phenomenon that this is the way they choose to address this stuff. You know, they could have easily released the story 5 days earlier and say, look what you're going to see, you know, and show people this amazing thing in the sky. I wonder, you gotta...
Well, this cultural experiment, this Petri tube that we call America, they don't like anybody to get too shook up, man. It's bad for business. Shop, 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 shop. Don't look at comments.
Right, which is so bizarre because you see the imagery and the language of nature and space and this sort of thing everywhere. I mean, just look at the names of automobiles, you know, that you see driving around the streets. You'll find, you know, they're all words of nature or space or something like that. I think of my own automobile. We have the Mitsubishi Outlander, right? And the Ford Escape and the Talon and all these, so, you know, and the Cougar and the, you know, who knows, the Mustang, you know, and the Thunderbird. These are all images of nature. And then you have Aster and all, and then you get into the star and the planet names and stuff. And it's,
well,
like,
if you're out in nature, see, the appearance of a comet in the sky is rather startling. It sort of shakes you up.
Right, because it's a change in the background.
TV. Don't go outside. Don't look up. You might see things that people haven't got explanations for, let alone comets.
Right.
You know, watch TV. You'll get it all there.
And then you get something.
But, you know, you see this big... You know, when I first started reading the Quetzalcoatl myths, I started saying, well, here, seeing a comet. A feathered, fiery serpent. That was a comet. And in the Aztec lore, that was the appearance of the god, you know. And then think about the Garden of Eden legend. The snake in the Garden of Eden, what was that? Was that a comet?
Hmm.
And then dovetail that into the panspermia concept, you know, the seed of life. Is that a comet?
Yeah, I mean,
comets are heavy, man. Don't ignore comets.
Right. You know, if you
they'll be sad.
If you think about this this thing that happened 65 million years ago, right? Down there in the Yucatan, there's just as good reason to believe that that was cometary as it was, you know, meteoroidal or asteroidal. But the point is that at that point, it was catastrophic, no doubt. But without that happening, the rise of the talking mammals would not have occurred. You know what I mean? So it is a, you know, one man's loss is another man's gain sort of thing. Or one critter's loss is another critter's gain, because that's the way it works, you know. You get smashed by something, and all of a sudden now something new emerges.
Yeah, I get start spiraling out in all kinds of fits of philosophy here. And, you know, I see the comet, and here it is, a third of the size of the sun, and I'm going, oh, my God. And I go into the forums, and they say, well, wait a minute, you know, that most of that is just nothing. It's just dust, you know. We got to find out how big the core is. I mean, that's what's important, the rock.
Why is that so important?
And I'm going, and then I spin further and further out in philosophy, and I start thinking about the universe and where everything came from. You know, where did it come from? Well, it all came from nothing. You know, poof. There was a multi-layered universe. Where did that come from? And what's a rock? Go prove a rock. What's a rock? It's something that is like everything else, impermanent. Hmm. It's a melting entity that one day is gone. But we're sort of rock star groupies here. We like the rock. We like, in the West, we like the solid thing. You got to be able to hold it and maybe spend it.
Yeah.
Or it doesn't count.
Yeah, if you can't beat on it with a hammer or spend it, it's not worth anything. It just has no place here.
So this comet doesn't count unless we figure out how big the rock is in the center of the darn comet. And then we'll throw a copper bullet at it and watch it explode.
Right, that's the first thing they do when they finally have access to these things. They want to put a bullet in it. It's just amazing. But of course, that's what the comet seems to be as well. So I don't know. Maybe
Comet Temple. They threw a little copper BB at it, and it set off a reaction that just freaked everybody out, including the scientific team.
Right now,
which dovetails back. See, we're sort of a We're spacing here, space thinking.
That's what we do.
And it goes round and round and round and round. But then back to the electrical phenomena.
There you go.
The electric universe, the L, the EL, the God, the L, electricity, angel.
That was called Deep Impact? Is
electron,
that the one?
Electron, yeah.
Right? Was that it, Kent? Deep Impact? Now, what they did was they tried to...
Put it in my search engine, Temple. It'll fry your brain.
Right, Comet Temple Tuttle.
Yeah.
And they shot this thing. Now, this is quite a feat of engineering to begin with, to be able to hit a comet with another projectile. I mean, think of hitting a bullet with another bullet, you know, after it's been fired from a gun. But what did they shoot it with, Kent?
Big copper sphere.
Copper. Why copper, everybody? That's a big question, right? Why
yeah,
copper?
Yeah, should have used gold. That'd have really been cool.
but I mean, honestly, copper is a metal that we associate with electricity.
Oh, and that got me too. This big iceberg that they said was out there, it wasn't an iceberg. It was a rock. Yeah, at least they found a rock. The core of Comet Temple, by gum, is a rock.
And they smashed that
but
thing
when
into
they
it.
Hit that rock, which is, I mean, it's a tiny little speck compared to the size of the rock. It set off a reaction that went many times the diameter of the comet out into space. Mm-hmm. And the team...
They were blown away.
The team were going, what did we do to that comet?
Right. I mean, and that was funny because that was actually stuff that, usually when things happen sort of, you know, unexpectedly and spontaneously, you can get the press, you can get the stuff before it gets scrubbed, you know.
It must be depressing to be a Newtonian raisin brain scientist.
God.
Because stuff is happening all the time.
Because those guys were saying, they said, we this was much larger explosion than we had expected.
Yeah. I thought it was cool, man.
Oh, man. That comet, I think...
But theories are constantly being challenged. Things are happening they don't understand. All the time on the various science blogs and publications.
Well,
you're getting stories, well, this and this and this event took place, which is beyond our understanding.
Right, right. And, you know, you've mentioned to me before that even in your son's work, that that the engineering is going way beyond the theory of some of this actual in computer design and all this sort of thing.
Yeah, as a culture, we're falling behind. We got to go out hire and pay some guys good money to be theoretical.
Yeah,
we got to do that. We got to do that because the theory is not keeping pace with what's happening in the laboratory, what the experiments that they're undertaking, whether it's in computer science, but my son is in, or whatever science, stuff is happening that there's no theory for.
Well, this is what, and I sound like a broken record because I say this all the time, but this is the crisis of science.
And the great theoretical physicists are dreamers. You got to hire dreamers.
Right, because see, because what's happened, Kent, is that the tools of science, right, have gotten so good that they've opened the doors on the unimaginable, and basically their own tools, the rational tools of science, are revealing the irrational basis of nature, and they don't know what to do with the data.
Yeah, and we're not supplying the intelligentsia we need in order to progress. I mean, we'll give a guy, a physicist, we'll give him a job in a college somewhere and say, okay, you can do your research, but in the meantime, you got to teach 20 hours a week and grade papers.
Right.
You get $60,000 a year.
Well, that's why the best...
We need to pay him a fortune.
Well, we don't...
He's a theoretical physicist.
I think we're so far beyond that at this point that the good work really is being done, but it's being done, the people that are doing it just to do it, and they're in their basements, or they're at the Hefter Institute, or they're at the Sirius Institute, or they're wherever, and they're just doing it, and it's going to, I don't know, when it comes to fruition, it's just going to...
And the real hardcore cases, they'll say, get out of my field. This is my specialty. You know, don't you dare look at comets. Because what you see doesn't count unless we tell you what you're seeing is what you're seeing. Don't do that. But what we need are people that go out of the box and into the realm of theory. I discovered most of my great discoveries were a result of imagination, said Einstein, The dream. We need the dreamers.
Right, that's where most of these theories come from anyway. dreams, wow moments, epiphanies, angelic visitations. That's how Descartes...
Comets,
who knows? All right, look, we're just past the top of the hour here. We need to take a break, okay?
Okay.
All right, everybody, it's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia. We got Kent Stedman with us live from Seattle. He'll be with us for another 57 minutes. Or so stick around. In the meantime, we'll play some music here and come back in just a few. All right, we'll mix it up a little bit tonight with the music. We had Anna and her father Sam DiAgostino playing some live stuff for us early in the first hour. If you missed it, it was great. We heard a little Ism, and I think now we'll play, what is this, Revolve. Check this out, the Aquarius Initiation. This is compliments of my friends from ITOM Lab and Jan Irvin, as a matter of fact. All right, it's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia. We'll be back in just a few minutes. Aquarius Initiation. That's Revolve. Compliments of Gnostic Media. All right, it's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia. This program is brought to you by listener support and a donation from professional counselor, marital and family therapist Betty Acree. Ms. Acree counsels individuals, couples, and children. She also works on anxiety issues, depression, and trauma. Her practice is devoted to aiding people to heal from old wounds that are getting in the way of their present lives. Information on services is available at 573-256-2914. As I read that, I wonder why she chose this program to underwrite. She must think there's a good market for her services. All the nutcases that listen to Radio Orbit, you know. No, that's all right. Okay, it is Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia. Let's get back to my good friend, the Bard himself, Kent Stedman, Seattle, Washington, sticking up with us here. Bardo, how are you?
Good.
Hey, what's happening there? You say the weather's been really whacked, huh?
Yeah, it's like C.S. Lewis weather. Going through the wardrobe into Narnia, and it's all frozen.
Anyway, all right.
It's supposed to just be sopping wet in Seattle. See, if it gets too hot or too cold in Seattle, this town closes down. Schools close, government offices close, everything closes. Kind of like it.
All right, that's good news.
It's a good idea. They just close it down to hell. It's been doing any damn good anyway.
No, things seem to keep working anyway. You know what I mean? It's like what needs to get done gets done.
We lost power for a long time, and I told everybody, quick, go out and buy a computer. Guess what? I've had to do twice since the big windstorm we had here. When was it? A while back.
Yeah, maybe 3 weeks ago or so.
Man, that was an apparition there. I stayed up all night, looked out my back window, and watched it. I mean, that was not just a windstorm. It was an electrical phenomenon. I had all kinds of wild thoughts going through my mind about that. You know, is this an artificial storm? Yeah.
Was that related, or was that coincidental with the solar outburst that we saw?
Yeah. We had a huge X8 class flare, and almost the moment it impacted Earth, it takes a few days. The moment it hit the magnetosphere and sort of did its nerf ball effect on it, on the magnetosphere, compressed it, you know, then suddenly, ta-da, the jet stream, they say on the news, is coming down. And it came down. We had a freaking hurricane here. I mean, it was straight line, solid winds for hours and hours and hours and hours. I thought I was in Florida. Now, this has happened before, once before since I've been here in Seattle. But the visuals were great. I sat out and watched it. There were the red flashes and the sounds of explosion where the transformers were going out, you know.
Right.
But also way, way up in the sky, there was an aurora type of effect going on up there. I mean, pulsating blue light way up.
Huh.
And then
it was persistent.
Ain't nobody gonna believe me on this. In fact, nobody saw it except me. So maybe I don't know. There was like ball lightning on the ground in my apartment complex, out in the court. There's little brilliant balls of light tripping around the ground like elves.
Cool.
Power went down, stayed down for 2 days. My computer fried. Took it in, they said, oh, yeah, well, we got a lot of fried motherboard. It was on when the power surge hit, you know, on, off, on, off, on, off.
It's probably something that Microsoft did on purpose, get people to get new.
Knocked out the Microsoft campus. I don't think they like that.
So much for that.
Anyway, so I had to go buy a computer, and then that one was no good, so I had to go buy, and I was offline for quite a while. And I had to go buy another one, and then trying to transfer all my old applications over onto this new compact I got here. it was a pain in the butt, and I'm just now getting it to where everything is back to where it was. Running a website, there's a lot going on. Feel pity for us poor webmasters, everybody out there. I want some. It's a pathetic job. You should feel really sorry for us. Not only do we have to publish all this weird crap on the web, but we got to keep all this equipment running.
You know, it's funny.
Behind the scenes, it's terrible.
Kent, my webmaster, Larry, just logged on, and he just popped in the chat room. I just see him there.
Yeah.
And he's probably saying, yeah, go Kent, man. Because, I mean, we have been through hell, too, in the last 12 months.
Then you got hackers that don't like you, that are hacking you all the time.
All the time, man.
And now you go on the web. I mean, some people are just connecting to the web, and they're getting weird viruses and this and that, just knocking everything down. Well, I had all of them. By the time I passed my system back together, I found that my old hard drive was just laced with viruses that I couldn't get out with it. That's the well-known Norton, and
oh God,
I had to resort to some extreme.
I think the free ones are the best ones. Now I use this one. I'm not going to say any of their names, but I use these free antivirus software. I think
I like those too.
I think they're better than the damn ones you pay for. I think the ones you pay for are creating new viruses.
Yeah, Norton is a virus. Sorry, you can
Microsoft.
Sue me if you
my
want.
God, they make more. They've caused more trouble than I use this Macintosh half the time, right?
Yeah.
And man, that thing's like a dream. You know, there's no worries of viruses. There's no antivirus software. You don't even have any antivirus software. I mean, I should knock on wood.
Well, I'm running all these well-known firewalls. I'm running antivirus with safeguard things that sentries that they're supposed to catch the viruses before they do any harm. I'm running all kinds of stuff, you know. But still, I have to go and clean crap out of my. I mean, three times a day I have to get rid of all these damn cookies and who knows what else.
Oh my gosh,
it's a mess. It's difficult to keep running, and some of you people that have been out humming along through MySpace and this kind of stuff, you better go and check your you better check your machine. You might have like 3,000 Trojans on your machine right now.
Yeah, but things starts to like act anomalous.
Yeah, pop-ups.
Yeah, really strange things happen.
You get pop-ups.
It takes forever to load a Microsoft Word document. You know.
Yeah, the one I like are these pop-ups that come off of usually Internet Explorer that say, "You ought to buy our virus software to get rid of this virus we just put into your machine." Oh man!
But you know, it's worth it too, though. You know,
wasn't the machine, the robotic age, supposed to free us all up?
That's what it was supposed to do, but it's certainly it's doing something. I don't know what it's doing, but you and I both know that we love it. I mean, that's why we persevere. And
but it's like warfare, man.
Oh my gosh. You know, Kent. But I go back and forth a lot on it too. But certainly it's worth it. I have two things that I was going to mention earlier before, in the first hour before you were on the air. But I'll say it now because you'll appreciate it. I got two emails of note, or at least that I thought I'd mention, right, in the last week. One of them said, "Mike, I'm listening to the Radio Orbit archives right now. It's like taking speed." That's all it said, right? And then signed by the person who sent it. And to me, I took that as a compliment, so it made me feel good. And then I got another one that said, "Mike, until I heard Radio Orbit, I thought I was crazy. Now I know there's at least two of us."
It's fringe, man.
Right? And I thought,
you're not crazy, you're holy. Yeah. Very holy.
So,
you're
anyway,
a spiritual person.
Those are the ones that make it worthwhile, you know, and you go, all right, now I know why I'm doing it. So, anyway.
Well, I'm a spotter. I'm not I do have an academic background. I did my time in the joint.
Mm.
I taught classes, and I was a professor. And I barely got out of that with my life, you know. It wore me down pretty bad. But what I'm trying to do now is I'm a spotter. Because my background is the arts, the visual arts, I thought, well, I'll apply it and just start looking for stuff, you know. And if I find something interesting, I'll plaster it up. Well, I've been doing that now 10 years. There's thousands of pages plastered up of weird stuff I've found. And then I'll let everybody else tangle with it. I mean, I may have found something really uninteresting. It has a simple explanation. But still, it allows people to tangle with it and work it out. And, you know, I'm finding, if you look at my website right now, that some of the great theoretical physicists of the world are ordinary people that see something and they'll post, look at this, what I just found, you know, type of thing. And they'll make a great discovery. Mm-hmm. Who knows how profound the discovery is.
Right.
Like with these concentric rings that appeared around the C2 at the approach of the comet. Coincidental? I don't know. But these rings the sun started singing. Did the earth start singing?
Mm.
Well, the sun started singing. Now, somebody's going to come in and say, oh, that's an artifact, and we have to deal with that with Photoshop.
Right, right.
And we have to subtract business. I don't think so. I think because the comet approach, it may have been a light factor, I'll admit that. But the comet approached, these radio lines started coming off the C2, the comet went past and it quieted down again.
Mm-hmm.
So what that is, I don't know, but it's potentially something interesting, you know. And the people that don't know any better, that haven't been screened through the educational institution to think a certain way, you know, ordinary people are finding stuff that's really, really interesting. And I'm thinking of one lady that both you and I know that lives in a trailer in Northern California that discovered anomalies around the sun that she labeled sun cruisers, you know, transient phenomena that takes place around the sun that shouldn't be there. And she discovered that, you know, by watching, by being a spotter. And boy, now that our Druid friend has got the more complete archives of the Soho Lasco camera, we're going to be tapping his shoulder a lot, because when we start seeing really bizarre events around the sun, and we've seen some humdingers.
Oh my gosh. that didn't involve comets, just things that we don't know what the hell they were.
Things appear.
Right.
Things with wings. Big spiral things going from Earth to Sun. You know, streaks going right and left and up and down and sideways. Wave-type patterns. There's no one thing. Geometry. For a while back, we began to see the corona of the sun express itself in very distinct geometry. Like cubes and Euclidean solids and things like that. Amazing. But that's what a spotter does. He spots that stuff, and then for better or worse, it posted, and then you deal with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the way I've always thought, at least for me, what has worked has been to be a rationalist, you know, and recognize that there are some things that are true or true enough, I guess, and things that aren't. But to be rational and to have an open mind and then go out on the fringes, and you'll find stuff as long as you keep your mind open and you don't go out there with a preconceived set of rules and expectations, you know, You'll come back knowing that the world is just absolutely more bizarre than you ever imagined it was.
And it's consistently bizarre. Maybe that's the constant of the universe, bizarre. Yeah. But what did McKenna say?
Stranger than you can imagine.
Stranger than you can imagine, and the real job of our universe is to seek novelty.
Right. Yeah, he called it a novelty-conserving engine that always expressed... It's interesting you bring it up, because I was talking about it in the first hour, about, you know, how states of higher complexity can spontaneously and unpredictably and unexpectedly arise from lower states of order. And that's this whole novelty thing. And there are people that's actually been proven, you know.
Yeah, here we discussing this wild stuff, and you know, people are listening. Hey, everybody out there that's listening. That's listening. The novelty never ends. If you follow my tracks, my moccasin tracks, there are days where things will get sort of boring, and I'll think, ah, phew. Everything's going back to normal. Everything's going back to normal. Then nothing weird is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's in space or in politics or wherever it is, you know, or on Earth, the powerful events and the natural forces of Earth, it's all going to just be okay today. It's going to be fine. Something weird happened. And this has been going on for 10 years. No let up. So McKenna was right.
And your life, yeah, I mean, if that's any indication of what's going on. my God.
Weird is in.
Yeah, weird is in. And whether you like it or not, you better get used to it, I think. I think the weird is just going to go mainstream. I mean, I think, you know, it's going to be sort of, you're not going to be able to get away from it, you know, as much as I watch so little television. But when I do, I am just blown away by how strongly propped up the past is and sort of the status quo. I mean, there is such an effort to make sure that the people that are watching think that everything is cool and nothing has changed, and that Dick Clark is still dropping the ball, and, you know, everything is just a remake of something that happened in the last 40 years. There's absolutely no evidence of the sort of stuff that we're talking about, you know, transformational planetary changes and this sort of thing. My God, that it couldn't be further from the cultural zeitgeist. Yet that appears to be what's happening.
That'd be nice. That'd be swell. You know, just for everything to just be okay and have a sort of formula. And there's no serious change, especially catastrophic change. And there was no birth and death and things like that. And everything just sort of cooked on fine. Sure, that'd be fine. I'd buy myself a whole fleet of Chevy pickups. and a boat and a football to toss back and forth in the park. That'd be swell, but sorry, it ain't that way. It's a mysterious deal we're all sandwiched in between this birth and death, and what goes on between. And I'll change. Everything's different the next day. Wake up, it's a new universe.
Ain't the truth.
But you know, I'm not opposed to everything being just the same. Fine. Well, that would be good. I used to, my brain doesn't work that way though, alas, because I used to, speaking of football, you know, I used to go out in the park and I'd be thinking about something. This is when I was a young man. I'd be thinking about something I thought was really profound, whether it was or not, I don't know. And I'd look off the edge of this little lake out in Sanger, California, where I used to go to think. Mm-hmm. I'd look off to the side. There's a bunch of guys playing catch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they weren't thinking stuff. They were just playing catch. And, you know, I can play catch, too. And I thought, that's what I should be doing. What am I doing sitting here cooking my brain? I want to play catch like them. My son's that way, too. He says, Dad, I know what you mean.
Mm.
Wish I could just go out and play catch. And it all and all the layers and layers of thought and where dreamers go
where mathematicians go. I wish they'd leave me alone, and I just so I could play catch.
Well, let's take a break, and we'll play catch in a few minutes. All right?
Be right back.
All right, everybody. It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit. We got the wonderful Kent Stedman, www.cyberspaceorbit.com on the web. You can always link to Kent's site from my site over there at MikeHagan.com. And also, don't forget to check out KOPN on the web at www.kopn.org. We're having a little get-together, by the way, at KOPN. Well, not at KOPN, but at the Unity Center on West Broadway on Sunday the 21st, next Sunday, starting at 3:30 p.m. And it's our annual meeting. We'll do board member elections, right? And have some live music. Cheryl Clapton will be playing. We'll have some piano music before she plays. And be great stuff. All right, so come on down, 3:30 p.m. or thereafter on the 21st of January, next Sunday. Okay? All right, let's see. Another piece of music here. My friend, Shannon Diaz. A toast to the month of July. Mike, you listen to Radio Orbit. Toast to the month of July. How about it? In the midst of the icy winter here in mid-Missouri. That's Sherelle C. Limes and the Lemons. Shannon Diaz on Radio Orbit. Shannon's cool, and that song's hilarious. That's the radio version that she had to come up with, because there's a line in that song that says, "Well, I have got a song for you, mother." Beep! Right? So she changes it and says, "Well, I've got a song for you, Chinese dentist. And I always thought that was so funny for some reason. So, anyway, good music from Shannon and Sherelle C. Limes and the Lemons. All right, it's Mike, and it's KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. You listen to Radio Orbit. We got Kent Stedman with us live from Seattle. And another 20 or 25 with Kent, so let's get right back to it. Thanks for sticking around, Bardo.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I took a little walk there and had to came back. I wasn't sure whether I was supposed to be on yet or not.
Nah, well,
but anyway, here I is.
All right, so look, we got 20 minutes left, 25 minutes. Let's talk about, philosophy a little bit. What, you know, everyone's saying, what the hell is going on? We're in the middle of all kinds of strange situations that you've, and I've been talking about all night, but I mean, including geopolitical, you know, who knows what is going on in that particular realm. We've got technology that seems to be completely just developing in at a rate that nobody can keep track of. We've got computers, we've got viruses, we've got population growth, we've got the spread of fascism, we've got the fall of the nation state, we've got psychedelics, we got, well, I mean, well, what do we make of it?
That's pretty spiffy. It's interesting, really interesting.
And that's just a few.
And kind of fun. And kind of fun. You know, people are, I get messages in email. God damn it, Stedman, if you don't quit scaring people, I'm going to call Homeland Security on you. Well, this is my fault. It's the universe, man.
That's what's scaring people is Homeland Security.
Yeah. And it's a wondrous world out there, and I think you've got to learn to live in awe, you know, and accommodate it. Because, I mean, our own mortal experience here is just about a half a second. It's a blink of an eye. And that's pretty wondrous in and of itself when you really back off and look at it. No. Did I scare you by saying that, everybody? But there are different layers to the universe and different layers to ourselves, too. There's the practical Kent and there's the dreamer Kent. And need nourishment for both halves. But by far, to me, the most profound is the wonder of it all. And when I see a comet coming by as massive and beautiful as this, I think, well, this is wondrous. And whether people feel a compelling need to explain it all and box it in and make it go away by doing that, in a sense, you know, once it's explained, then you don't have to deal with it anymore.
Right.
Give it a name.
That's right.
But it's still amazing. It's amazing. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to call this Planet Rex. I know it's just an ordinary big comet, so they say. But it's too big. Too big and too profound. It needs another name. We call it McZero. McNothing. So I'm going to name it Planet Rex. And maybe it is a proto-planet.
Who knows?
You ever heard that?
Sure. What about that one Herculobus? What's Herculobus?
Well, that's sort of South American version of PX, Planet X. That's where the mythology in South America, the Gnostics and other groups have been watching for the incoming of a Hercubula. I don't know.
Yeah, Herculobus.
Herculobus, Hercules, and the Red Comet.
Hmm.
And what do we got here? We got from the pictures in Oslo, we got a red comet. But I'll just call it Planet Rex.
Okay.
And I'll catch a lot of slack for that. That's not a planet, it's a comet. But protoplanets are literally entities that are trying to become planets. Maybe that's what we're watching right now. Or maybe it's a series of a swarm of giant dragons, comets, whatever you want to call them, whether you're the poet or the scientist, that we're now going to see coming our way pretty soon. A guy, if you've tracked down my page, a guy ran the His Starry Night program, and he found that there are indeed, like you mentioned, I believe, at the beginning of your program, there's more comets out there, and some of them are quite near.
Oh, man, they're always...
And one is untitled. They don't know what it is. And when we were watching Swan is another camera on the SOHO spacecraft, and it's way it's a deep pan where you're back away from the sun looking at a quite large field. And when P1, this comet, started coming in, it looked, there was something coming off the tip of it, as though there may have been a satellite, or it was cabbing. But, and a lot of people were wondering if it was breaking up. Whether it did or not, I don't know.
Hmm.
By the time it got on the C3, it looked pretty stable and intact.
Right, and these pictures from
but
the...
early, before it was even near the ability for the C3, and I say that, that's a camera. It's
right.
A real camera. It's like a camera. And before it came on there, it was doing other stunts, you know, from a wider pan. It looked like something was coming off the southern tip of the comet, so I don't know. You know, Hale-Bopp, that got a lot of people in trouble when they started saying that Hale-Bopp had a companion.
Right, that there were two parts of that nucleus, yeah.
But, the astronomers generally said that it, later on, like 2 years later, that it may have had they call it a satellite. So all that trouble was caused by saying that the Hale-Bopp had a companion or a satellite caused a big stir amongst me.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That may have been true.
Well,
there's an article that came out that copped to that.
Mm-hmm.
But philosophically, it's all a big magic show. And there are layers to it. And maybe more than one universe at play here.
Yeah, now the, you know, science... In all of its strangeness now, which, you know, science, I've said it before, but it's like psychology now. The theories are so wild that, you know, nobody knows what's really going on. But, I mean, even scientific theory now is saying, well, gosh, there's how many different dimensions and different, you know, it's a multiverse instead of a universe and all this.
There's a group of theorists, if you put in your search engine, antimatter and comet next to each other.
That's another one, yeah.
There's a whole group of theorists that people are paying more and more attention to that basically state that when antimatter enters our universe, it's called a comet. So what kind of interloper do we have, allegedly, from the deep, mysterious Oort cloud? You know? What are these critters? Are they actually entities from a different phase coming in? I don't know. Are they antimatter? When that copper pellet hit Comet Temple, I thought, that looks like an antimatter reaction.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's one explanation that could be argued for the reason that that explosion was so much larger than anyone had expected. If that comet was something like that, like antimatter, for God's sake.
And the electrical universe. The fact that maybe some of the planets we have now in orbit that are recognizable planets were interlopers at one time, like Venus. Was that something that was that cometary? Did it come into our solar system and as a protoplanet to become a planet?
Right.
Condense and become a planet and to go into orbit. And, you know, not all planetary bodies have to be in orbit. Road planet traveling from solar system to solar system. I guess they're not really called a planet until they're captured in orbit. I don't know. I don't get the distinctions too well in my mind about all that. But there's various types of entities, and I don't think all comets are the same. And according to the astronomers at Pic de Bure, the Hale-Bopp was not a dirty eyes. It was a lot more than that.
Hmm.
So constantly we're learning new and new stuff, and then the more you learn, the more you realize it ain't over, and it'll never be over.
Right, this guy that was on the program last week, Stephen Buhner, who's one of my favorites, he likes to quote Johann Goethe, right, the German poet and botanist, and Goethe always said stuff like, "We discover so much because we know so little."
It amazes me too, you know. Certain people like to have explanations, you know, and they'll reference to certain great scientists of the past who truly were great scientists, like Sir Isaac Newton, and they'll say, "Well, the universal laws he discovered are immutable, you know. We don't dare go outside that." Thing is, though, Newton was an alchemist. He was a strange cat, you know. In his spare time, he secluded himself and studied arcane wisdom.
That's right.
The writings of Thoth the Atlantean, and he was a serious alchemist. I mean,
yeah,
where he was trying to transmute.
Right, and he did
toward
that.
The gain of transmuting himself. I mean, that's what he was really trying to do.
And people, even when they do hear about Newton and alchemy, they assume that the alchemical part of his career was the early part. That's the opposite of that. He did all of his work with, the physics laws that we know. You know, Newton's three laws of physics and the maintenance of velocity and all this sort of stuff and reaction versus action and all this Newtonian physics. But he basically abandoned that and then finished his life and his career studying the alchemical arts.
George Ellery Hale, in short, was a solar astronomer, father of astrophysics.
Hmm.
One of the founders of Caltech, and had a hand in building the largest telescope on Earth four times. He coined the term Americanitis, meaning the incessant desire to do something bigger and better than before.
Right, Americanitis.
He also admitted to discussing telescope plans with a little green elf while spending summers in a padded room in his backyard.
Sounds like a DMT flash.
We need to pay these guys better, though.
Oh, man.
These theorists. The ones that dare the friends.
Well, I mean, I think at this point, you know, it's the wizards and the shamans and the magicians, and they're the ones that are, you know, men and women, the people that are practicing, like you say, the arcane arts at this point. Everything else is just, I mean, I think we're getting really toward the narrow neck.
There's something, folks, about us human beings that is not limited. You can't rope it. You can't put it in a corral with my horse. It's called the imagination. And the imagination has in its reach everything. And whether you want to plunge into the very, very small, down to the micro, the nothing, if you want to plunge the outer universe, if you want to take off and spread your wings and fly, it goes there. And it's a real force. It's probably the most powerful force within us that makes us human beings, not just humans, but being human. Power of the imagination.
Hmm.
And it's real. It's not unreal. It's real. It doesn't go away. You spend most of your life, when you think about it, imagining stuff, whether you're doing your income tax even, or driving down the street in downtown Seattle, or at night in your dreams. You know, your imagination is the thread that threads everything together. And you spend more time in your imagination than any other place, in all the layers of your conscious self and your layers of perception. You spend more time in the imagination than any other place. And yet, culturally, there are influences and elements and people, politicians, priests, that want to cut you off from that
mm.
and make you believe that it's not good, that it's not real, and don't seek after the mysteries, which is the natural territory and innate desire of the imagination to keep going and going and going and see what's out there or in there. So, essentially, we are dreamers. And you can fry your brain by sticking your tongue in a light socket. That might cut the dreams off a little bit. But they don't go away. And they're real and they should be dealt with. And in fact, they sort of... we need gyms for training gyms. G-Y-M-N. We need to exercise our imagination, make it stronger and stronger and stronger.
Right.
It requires a little bit of directed energy. And not towards containing oneself more, but freeing oneself more to let it fly.
All right. Hey, listen, listen to this. I've been trying to come up with a way to sneak this in, and now's the time. I mentioned earlier that a couple days ago was the anniversary of the death of James Joyce, right? And I was reading some old stuff of his earlier today, and I have a real short poem. I'm going to read it real fast and then get your response to it, because I want to ask you a question about music after I read it to you, okay? All right, this is a short poem by James Joyce. It's called Strings in the Earth and Air. Strings in the earth and air make music sweet. Strings by the river where the willows meet. There's music along the river, for love wanders there. Pale flowers on his mantle, dark leaves in his hair. All softly playing, with head to the music bent, and fingers straying upon an instrument. So, Ken, say something about music and using that as a tool to launch the imagination.
You can leave the earth by playing music. Doesn't always happen, but it's happened to me. It's like any art will do that for you. And art is the playground. It's where you allow your imagination to play. And whether you're plucking a string or doing a painting or writing a poem, they're all wonderful exercises. I love them all. It can put you in a state of rapture so profound that you can leave. You can leave your kids, for sure, you can leave your worries and your cares and all that kind of ordinary stuff. But I've experienced sitting down with a group of musicians playing bluegrass music, for heaven's sake, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Down home, kicking music, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Played one night for a bunch of lawyers in downtown Fresno. And we hit a sort of threshold or a harmonic or something between four musicians, a banjo picker and two fiddlers and me, where we went out of time and space altogether. And we do not remember several hours. And when we sort of snapped back into this world, as the sun came up, first thing we noticed, we looked around and all the lawyers were still there. We hadn't driven them away.
Amazing.
And they were standing there very still with their mouths open. Mackerel. And then the next thing we were doing the next day was calling each other up. What happened?
Wow.
We didn't know what happened.
Kind of like they look when they see a big comet flying by.
And the thing was, is there, something was... Instead of us playing the strings were playing us.
Hmm.
And our egos just sort of gave way and emerged into a place where the old poets called the muses. The muses stepped in, and they ran the show for a little while. Stepped in and took over. And it was beautiful, wonderful experience. Hmm. I mean, even though we were a little bit puzzled the next day, we all looked back after many years of picking music and say, you know, that happened back then, and I haven't really been able to make it happen again. Well, sort of, but not completely. But
mm-hmm.
It was a threshold. There is a threshold that can be reached through the arts or even the sciences, you know, through mathematical exploration, things like that, that take you into another dimension. In fact, now our mathematicians are talking about multiple dimensions more and more and more and more.
Right.
Why? Because they've been there.
Right.
And you know, you can't have a concept like the word infinity without, I mean, that word appeared, but it was coined by somebody because they had an experience.
Right, that's the whole point of language. You can't go somewhere until you can describe it, right?
Yeah, or the universe, or the cosmos, or eternity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, terms like that, where'd they come from? Nowhere? No, they came from somewhere. They came from somebody having an experience and they had to cook up a word for it.
Right. And like you said earlier, when you can wrap a word around something, then you somehow have it explained and it's no longer mysterious.
Yeah, the word doesn't quite do it.
Mm-hmm.
It helps a little bit. There are experiences that I've had where words won't go.
Tell me about it.
And in fact, I'm convinced what we normally call the mind, at least the binary mind, the kind of mind that you use to grope your way around Earth, doesn't go. And you can go there anyway. And when you get back, you try to say, to frame in words or even in thoughts, well, what happened? You can't. And so what you learn to do is just accept through another sort of sensation inside oneself, inside myself, interface with the universe through another feeling or some sensation. I call it awe. I think that's a good word, but then I trap it again.
Right.
But there are things that cannot really be explained, and I doubt ever will be explained.
Right. I think that's something that eventually you have to accept, this idea that there really is no closure on some things. I was talking, well, there is closure tonight because this is the closure of a circle that I began in the first hour of the program, but the idea that there is really not closure when it comes to describing things, and that, you just have to deal with the fact that you never really know eventually what's going to come out of a situation.
There's an old yogi once that said, well, what you can't say, you can't say it. You can't whistle it either.
All right, Bardo, I think that's a good place to wrap it up.
Okay.
All right.
Well, anyway, keep watching along with me. We'll see what happens next.
Yeah, keep an eye over there at cyberspaceorbit.com. The images are such a big part of this. If you can see the stuff that we're talking about, it really brings it home for you. But certainly go on over there to Kent's site. And as always, you can link there from mine, and we'll be following over there on the forum as well, and lots of people chiming in. So, as always, Bardo, thanks so much for the work. I know it's been an amazing sort of marathon for you, and I appreciate the fact that you've been keeping your eye on all this stuff. Nobody else is doing it, so.
Okay.
All right, man, take care.
See y'all.
Yeah, love you. Bye. All right, everybody, Kent Stedman, www.cyberspaceorbit.com. Amazing, amazing stuff that Kent's been doing for a long, long time now, and he's certainly appreciated from this side of the microphone. All right. Okay, and you guys are appreciated as well. People who have been listening to the program, as always, thanks so much. We'll come on back to you next week and talk with Dr. Michael Heisen and Star Newland from the Sirius Institute in Hawaii. We'll talk about dolphins and whales and language, communication. We'll try to find out what Dr. Heisen and Dr. McKenna were talking about when they met yesterday. There's a picture of that. I can prove it up on the forum if you want to see those two chatting away and scribing something with their pencils. Who knows what sort of wild business they got off on. But at any rate, next week will be a great program. Dr. Heisen, Star will be with us again. And all of you, hopefully. We'll also have some great music. I haven't quite determined what it will be yet, but I'll try to do something good. We'll do it up. And in the meantime, we'll hear one more song from my friend Matt Presti in St. Louis. And we'll talk to you all next week. It's Mike. You've been listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. Have a wonderful week. Talk to you soon. Thank you.
living, thriving, or were we dreaming of a paradise full of life, believing we were chasing dreams and memories of a life we were stealing, feeling, looking for heaven, till we got caught stealing, we had to question its nice true meaning, we looked deep into the soul to find the source of our pain, so we could let it go, we gotta be strong, some things are beyond our control, wisdom we will grow, and there's no place but up left to go. Into my eyes, to see the pain of a thousand years gone by. Step into my soul. Don't be afraid to love, don't be afraid to grow. Then we'll rise above all the lies of control. If we learn to love, there's still time. If people just quit believing the lies, we could change this world in a blink of an eye. We don't have to die when we can all decide to stand up and stop this genocide. We don't have to fight, just walk away from the lie, and the walls come tumbling down. All around this elite crowd, when we lift the shroud and expose these bloodlines, there is a choice for every man alive. Let him who has a voice speak now, or forever stay a slave to this game. I know that you don't like me. I said it before and I'll say it again. Life is the truth that you live. So help us stop the suffering. Let's end this slavery. Look into my eyes to see the pain of a thousand years gone by. Step into my soul. Don't be afraid to love. Don't be afraid to grow. We will rise above all the lies of control.